Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Join me every afternoon, 3 to 6, right here on KRXA 540. With great guests, hot topics, and a little humor, we help you navigate in today's world. More information, web streaming, and archives at peterbcollins.com. The Peter B. Collins Show, afternoons 3 to 6 on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Following today's Senate bailout hearing with the CEOs of General Motors, Chrysler, and Ford, Banking Committee Chairman Chris Dodd says there seems to be a consensus that bankruptcies are not an option and doing nothing is not a solution.
One, we're not going to write a check for any amount of money without some serious conditionality associated with it. But secondly, I don't think we want to walk away without trying to get something done.
One idea strongly suggested may have Rick Wagner and Bob Nardelli resuming some previously tabled discussions.
If we write in the proviso that you don't get a dime unless General Motors and Chrysler combine, how would you react to that?
We'd certainly be willing to look at it and consider it very seriously.
If in fact that's the criteria, that means we get money to save Chrysler and the people that have worked there for 80-some years, I would do it.
One thing's for sure, says Mark Zandi at MoodysEconomy.com, the nation cannot afford car company bankruptcies.
Have you put a price tag on that in terms of unemployment compensation, pension benefits?
Measurably more than that.
Measurably more than that.
Yeah.
So we're not talking, it's a close call.
Not a close call.
Several hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah, it's not even in the same universe.
A similar hearing occurs tomorrow at the House Financial Services Committee. Factory orders were down 4% in November because we aren't buying enough stuff to keep them humming. Retail sales were down markedly, just about across the board. Same month, only Walmart was distinctly up. Many of us stayed home to go shopping.
We're looking for savings from Internet retailers. ComScore says more of us shopped online during Cyber Monday, the Monday after Thanksgiving. But we didn't spend quite as much. And the most visited sites were places many Americans go to for bargains. eBay, Amazon, Walmart, and Target.
That's CBS's Cammie McCormick. The good news for the consumer, and there is some, is on mortgage rates and oil. 30-year fixed-rate mortgages now average about 5.5%. And oil prices keep coming down, below $44 a barrel today. Brokers and traders may not like it much, but gasoline prices are going lower.
It was the energy companies that dragged the market south late in the day. And this is after an analyst at Merrill Lynch predicted we could see crude oil at $25 a barrel in the coming months.
CBS's Alexis Christophorus. On Wall Street, the Dow lost 215 points. The Nasdaq was off almost 47. The Iraqi government has given its final approval to the agreement on the orderly withdrawal of U.S. troops.
The Iraqi action sets a 3-year time frame for U.S. troops to leave, the final deadline early 2012. Word of the agreement brought one of the administration's most optimistic statements yet about the U.S. military mission.
We have a path now to help our troops get home.
Press Secretary Dana Perino said the agreement puts future U.S.-Iraq ties on strong footing.
CBS's Peter Mayer. In Baghdad, terror bombs today killed 17 people, including two U.S. personnel. This is CBS News.
When it comes to holiday recipes, some search engines get you lost in all the links, but not Yahoo Search. To prove it, we switched Amy's Google page with Yahoo and filled her kitchen with live turkeys.
Oh my!
Wait till you see how Yahoo Search can help with recipes.
Did that turkey just type pumpkin pie?
Yep, which instantly gives us this drop-down menu.
Suggesting a ton of recipes and cooking ideas. Helpful.
Cool. Now, how about dinner?
Switch to Yahoo Search and get straight to your answers. Start now at yahoo.com.
Yahoo!
Maybe it's just me being a coach and all, but I thought winning was supposed to be hard. So Staples is doing this gifted for free thing where 10,000 people are going to win their entire purchase. GPSs, digital cameras. You know what? You're awesome at listening to the radio. You deserve a trophy or something, too. I mean, everyone else is winning these days. 10,000 winners, everything in the cards. Where's the challenge, Staples? Go to giftedforfree.com if you absolutely must. No purchase necessary. Go to giftedforfree.com for official rules. Must be 18 or older. Ends 12/24/08. I win.
Getting a soldier's bell rung by a roadside bomb can change things for the worse for a long, long time.
Mild but potentially dangerous blast wounds may be underdiagnosed in Iraq and Afghanistan, and more severe brain injuries expose troops to long-term health consequences.
Dementias, Parkinson's disease, depression, aggressive behavior.
Dr. George Rutherford heads an expert National Academy of Sciences panel that calls for increased efforts to identify affected soldiers and more research to prepare the nation for what could be a flood of disability claims in the coming years. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
NASA plans to wait a while on the launch of the Mars Science Lab. The director of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory is Doug McKistion.
It's absolutely the right thing to do to make sure that this mission, to conduct the science that's appropriate, is tested thoroughly, is well understood, and that we take the appropriate time to do this before we launch this.
The launch is being put off until 2011. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
When shopping for holiday gadgets, some search engines get you lost in all the links, but not Yahoo Search. To prove it, we switched Mark's Google page with Yahoo and brought a mall Santa along for the ride.
Ho, ho, ho!
Man, I'm sick of mall Santas.
Ho!
You'll never get tired of how Yahoo Search helps you shop. Type a gift like digital camera.
Hey, there's popular brands, ratings, buyer's guides, all at the top of the page.
It's a miracle on... what street are we on?
Switch to Yahoo Search and get straight to your answers. Start now at yahoo.com.
Yahoo!
At Ace Hardware, people are lining up for great gifts for Christmas and great value.
Hi, I'm a bargain hunter. I mean, I like giving gifts. I just like it more when I don't have to spend a lot.
No problem. Now through Monday, get a Snap-on flashlight 3-pack for just $19.99.
Yeah, really?
Or a case pocket knife with a bonus Brooks & Dunn CD for $39.99.
Now you're talking.
Save money and time at your neighborhood Ace, the holiday helpful place. Sale price is good at participating stores while supplies last. See store for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
What's so funny? The Peter B. Collins Show, originating from San Francisco. We're now on the air live in Boston on AM 1510. It's great to have you listening in New England. Got a power pack show, and we do request that you stay tuned for the entire 3 hours. And if you need to leave for any reason, please email me for an excuse. All right? That's peter@peterbcollins.com. In a moment, Faz Shakir will join us from the Center for American Progress, update us on a number of stories breaking out of Washington these days. Later this hour, we're going to talk about the bailout blues with Professor Robert Auerbach of the University of Texas. He served on the House Banking Committee, that's what it used to be called, when he was there. Henry Gonzalez was the chair of that, a congressman from Texas, a take-no-prisoners progressive. And Professor Auerbach will return with us a little bit later this hour. Scott Dick will join me next hour. He's our contributor on military and veterans issues. We'll get his view of the attacks in Mumbai last week and the responsibility being attributed to Pakistan for it and what that portends. These two nuclear powers at each other's throats, and how will the U.S. play this during the transition, and how will the Obama administration play it? Also on today's program, we'll be taking your calls in the Free Speech Zone, and we'll get a wacky news update from R.J. Shulman. Be prepared for that. And anytime you call from Boston, well, I've got a free DVD for you to reward you for listening and calling the program. Our toll-free number, by the way, is 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And today's free DVD is called Burning the Future. It's about coal in America, and it's a powerful documentary that takes a look at the ugly process of what's called mountaintop mining, where they blow the lid off the sucker, take the seam of coal out of it, and then they just kind of throw the rubble back on top and leave a disaster behind for the local ecology and people who live in what they call hollers in West Virginia. So it's a very powerful piece, and it turns out we've got somebody who's going to collect one here in just a moment, but stay on the line. First, I want to introduce Faz Shakir. His name is spelled F-A-I-Z, and his last name, S-H-A-K-I-R. And Faz is the research director at the Center for American Progress. And Faz, I'm giving you a little embellished introduction today for the benefit of our new listeners in Boston, if you want to give them a shout-out.
Well, yeah, I'm happy to. You know, I went to college up there, and I'm a huge Red Sox fan, so there you go.
Where'd you go to college there?
Harvard.
At Harvard. You're a Harvard guy. I see. I didn't even know that.
Yes, sir.
And I've been talking with Faz on a regular basis every week for a couple of years now. He is right there at the pulse at the Progressive Think Tank at the Center for American Progress, and he manages two different publications. One is the Daily Progress Report, and I recommend it to you. You can get it delivered free in your email every day. Just log on to progressreport.org. And he also rides herd over thinkprogress.org, which is their instant update site with blogging capabilities. And I get a lot of good information from there on a regular basis. In fact, that's what made me decide to give away the DVD about coal mining today, Faz, because your lead story right now is a shocker for me. The Bank of America of North Carolina, which used to be a California institution before it got taken over, is announcing that it will no longer loan money to companies that use mountaintop mining techniques.
Yeah, and apparently they were persuaded in, with the best of intentions by the National Resources Defense Council, who flew Bank of America executives over these coal mine sites recently and introduced them to residents who were living in the area who had been affected by mountaintop removal. And after seeing that firsthand, the Bank of America issued this press release today saying that they're going to phase out their financing for companies that are engaging in mountaintop removal mining.
Now, this is a bank with a green conscience. I mean, they've laid off thousands of workers in California. So this is a turnabout for me. Hugh McCall stole this bank from us here in California. We're still a little bitter. I'm not an elitist, and I'm not going to reach for my guns and my Bible, but I am bitter.
I think it needs to be seen in the shift of generally better green business practices by all of corporate America. We see NBC now engaging in this long, week-long green effort to talk about it, to promote it on its networks. We've seen this across a variety of different sectors. Of course, Google has led the way in many regards. Many hotels we've here are now trying to transfer into green power, and we're seeing it more and more. So I think there's now a competition in the best sense between businesses to promote the fact that they're greener than the others.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've banked with Bank of America for over 30 years, and they've stopped losing my money, which I appreciate. But this is the first opportunity I've had really to praise them for business practices in quite a while. So,
but to throw a little bit of sad news into the mix, of course, we know that the EPA is continuing to push forward on a last-minute regulation to allow the dumping of mining debris near streams, and that would basically overturn the Clean Water Act. And it's along the lines of the Bush administration's disregard for the environment. They're trying to rush this through at the very end and allow an effort that would dirty the waters and disregard the Clean Water Act.
Yep, those are the midnight rules, and there's a whole raft of them that are going to be percolating through the system for some time to come now. We got a caller from Boston, and we want to pause to say hello. It's Peter in Boston. Great name, great city. You're a winner, Peter.
You're not so bad yourself, Peter.
Well, thank you.
And I'm so glad to have you in Boston.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm delighted to be on in New England. Have you done your part to market our program to 10 of your friends?
I'm about halfway through it. I've told about 5 friends about you and emailed.
Uh-huh, good.
And we're just so happy to have some progressive talk in Boston. This is supposed to be a hip city, but it seems like everything here is right-wing radio.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I understand. I haven't been in Boston for a while and listened to the radio. I was there about a year ago, and it was Howie Ka and a bunch of right-wing syndicated shows. I couldn't find anything to the left of the far right.
Yeah, we haven't had progressive talk in Boston for 2 years since the 06 election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess Clear Channel wanted to teach us a lesson or something.
But maybe it was a John Kerry special payback. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I've been podcasting you, and I'm really delighted and totally surprised that you're broadcasting in Boston now.
It's a real thrill for me. I'm glad you called today. Hold on. We're going to get your address and mail you this powerful DVD about coal mining in America. It's called Burning the Future. And, Peter, I want you to call in the first time you hear me say something that you violently disagree with, and I want you to call up and make your best case, okay?
I appreciate the invite.
All right, you got it.
Thanks, Peter.
It's open and
Peter, can I just comment on that real quickly?
Go ahead, Faz.
You know, we did this report in 2007 here at the Center for American Progress called The Structural Imbalance of Political Talk Radio, and what we found is that in the top five commercial radio stations around the country, the 257 news talk stations that are owned by the top five companies, that 91% of what they were churning out in talk radio was conservative.
Yep.
And what was really baffling to me was that in progressive cities like New York, like Washington, D.C., like Boston, like Philadelphia, you go to these places in Los Angeles, they're dominated by conservative talk. And the reason for that is because of this structural imbalance in the ownership of these stations. And so I want to commend Peter, and he's been fighting this uphill fight, and he's doing a great job of it, of trying to carve into that market that is dominated by conservative talk radio.
Well, thank you. You're sure right. We're outnumbered 9-1, and we're working on changing that ratio. Peter in Boston, thank you very much for making my day.
Thank you, Peter. And if it wasn't for the Internet, I'd be crazy right now.
Well, we're glad you're saying, if it weren't for this show, I'd be right next door in the therapist's office probably every day.
That's great.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. Good luck with everything.
Okay. Great
thank
to hear
you
from
so much.
You. So, Faz, tell me about who in Washington is nervous these days because of the work of Nora Dennehy. She was appointed by the Attorney General, who I consider a very lame duck appointee, Michael Mukasey, to investigate the firing of U.S. attorneys. And to his chagrin, she appears to be taking this quite seriously.
Yeah, and this is all according to a new report by Newsweek's Michael Isikoff, who says that that apparently the special prosecutor is pushing to get Karl Rove to testify about what he knew, who put together the list of the attorneys to be fired. That's a question that we never really have had answered yet. So Nora Dennehy, who's the prosecutor, is sending a letter requesting these officials to testify, and there apparently is some now positive news that Rove may go ahead and comply with the attorney gate probe, and this is of course in light of his prior refusals to testify before Congress, which has requested his testimony for a very long time, past year.
Right. Yeah. Well, and this will be very interesting to see. Of course, Rove's potential change of heart that you're describing here could be because the prophecy of Kyle Sampson, who was the number two guy at Justice and who also served as essentially the chief of staff to Alberto Gonzalez. He's the one under oath who said, well, we talked to each other and said, why don't we just gum it to death and run out the clock? Now, he was referring to a slightly different issue at the time, but that has been the strategy here. And they've bought enough time to get to the end of the Bush presidency, and now Karl Rove probably figures that he'll get support for his legal fees, whatever it takes. But I guess he's ready to face the music now that they have pretty well run out the clock.
And don't miss that possibility that you could get a pardon there, Peter. So there's always that potential. But I think the fact that there's an independent prosecutor going after this is something now that Karl Rove knows he can't control, that regardless of who's in charge of the administration, you've got somebody who's going to pursue this and follow this. So he's got to either comply now or he's going to face the music at some point.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Faz Shakir. We'll talk about bailouts. I've found one that I like. Not the one for Wall Street. Not the one for Detroit. We'll tell you about it next. Coming up here on the Peter B. Collins Show, you can call in toll-free 888-5-PETER-B. And Boston listeners, I've got DVDs for you. So call in, check in, and let me know what you're thinking. 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Now live in Boston on 1510 AM.
We at KRXA 540 would like to take this opportunity to wish you and your loved ones the very best during this holiday season. From all of us to all of you, happy holidays.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Let me tell you about Chavez Jewelry Designs in Watsonville. Have you ever noticed how significant beautiful jewelry can be? A lovely diamond ring, special necklace, sparkling earrings, or a watch can be truly meaningful. When purchasing or repairing precious memories, having a friend in the jewelry business is critical. Chavez Jewelry Designs is your friend in the jewelry business. With Chavez Jewelry Designs, you will find the best products and repair service at the lowest prices. Stop by and check out Chavez Jewelry Designs, conveniently located at 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville's Crestview Shopping Center. Chavez Jewelry Designs is open weekdays 10 to 7. Call Chavez Jewelry Designs at 768-8004. That's 768-8004. A friend is waiting.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Peter B. Collins Show, live coast to coast. And that's the way I like it. We continue with Faz Shakir from the Center for American Progress here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and we're joined by Dave in Eureka. Welcome, Dave. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Peter and Faz, I'm so suspicious of everything to do with this administration, and particularly the role Kyle Rove's part in it. If he's hinting at all that he might start getting cooperative, he's saying to Bush, as I see it, give me a full and complete pardon, or you know I got an awful lot I can say.
Wow. Dave, I hadn't thought of that. But that's an interesting idea attributed to the thought process of Mr. Machiavelli Jr.
And one thing to add to that is that at the same time, Karl Rove is apparently orchestrating what they're calling the Bush Legacy Project.
No, Dana Perino denied that.
She said that she's in charge. She didn't deny that it's going on. And she just said that, oh, well, I'm the one who's leading it, not Karl Rove. But in fact, we all know who wears the pants in the Bush Legacy Project. And it's been reported numerous times that Karl Rove is leading the Bush Library end of this and is holding meetings with Karen Hughes in the White House that I'm sure Dana Perino is involved in.
We love it when the double K's team up, Karen and Carl. And they are the original defenders of Bush, and they are now working on burnishing his legacy. And you see it in these exit interviews where they're trying to spin Iraq as, gosh darn, it's so sad that intelligence was wrong. And he tripped up when Charlie Gibson confronted him on this the other day and was just kind of wishfully thinking that the intelligence had been accurate. But then when asked, well, what if they really didn't have any WMD? He said, well, absolutely, I still would have taken Saddam out. I mean, it's contradictory.
Yeah, it's contradictory exactly to what Karl Rove said the next day, which is that, oh, well, if we had known that there were no WMDs, then we wouldn't have gone into Iraq. Well, the head of the Bush Legacy Project might actually want to talk to the president, because they seem to be on different pages.
Yeah. So, Faz, on the bailouts, as I was alluding to, the one bailout that I really feel strongly and positively about is sending money from the federal government to state governments. Because the kinds of cuts that we're looking at here in California will permanently cripple our economy, at least for a couple of years. Maybe I'll take back that word permanently, but it'll do significant damage. And the setbacks to our public education system are pronounced. And that is a kind of reduction in investment that will harm us for many years to come. And so I believe that this is the most sensible transfer of wealth that Washington could make right now to prop up the budgets of the states, most of which can't run deficits, and really avoid the deepest cuts that would cause the greatest harm to the most vulnerable in this very dire economic situation we're in.
I'm with you 100%. I think that's absolutely the number one priority. If you're looking for a way to stimulate the economy, the easiest and quickest way to do that is to aid the states for a number of reasons. One is they can create jobs with a variety of different projects, infrastructure projects, many of which are on hold in this period of economic crisis. And then the second is that, of course, we know that the social safety nets of the states is being with extreme pressure now. Medicaid, a whole host of other state programs are being overburdened. Unemployment benefits, all those kinds of things are being overburdened at this stage. So financial assistance from the federal government would, of course, help alleviate some of that as well.
And maybe we can get Arnold to drive his hydrogen Hummer from Sacramento to Washington to ask for a bailout.
Yeah, well, you know, he was here just recently, and his line was, and I was a little surprised, but
yeah,
it was a little bit fresh, but he said, you know, he doesn't want a bailout and that he wants, he'll either cut spending or raise taxes. And that's not, I don't think that's the right message at a time of a recession. What you really need is not to be restraining government spending and trying to tighten the belts, because that only causes a deeper and deeper recession.
Well, I'd like enhanced video of that comment from Schwarzenegger, because I just have a hunch that Grover Norquist is right behind him brandishing a weapon.
Exactly right. I mean, this all falls in line with the fact that Grover Norquist wants to drown the government in a bathtub, and this is how you do it. You say, okay, in a period of recession, let's tighten our belts, and of course you get to the point where government can't do anything for people, and you've got no services to provide and no funds to do it with. So for all those libertarian small government types, this is their dream come true.
Now, Faz, your boss, John Podesta, is co-chair of the Obama Transition Team, and you wouldn't leak if I asked you to. But tell us what's next. What jobs should we expect to be filled in the next week or two?
And not that I am speaking from any point of knowledge here, but if I were, as an outside observer looking at this, I would be looking next week for some energy appointments. Mm-hmm. That's the one area we haven't seen a lot, and I think there's the part Secretary of Energy might be coming out. The EPA had be coming out. There's a couple of good energy candidates, Kathleen Sebelius being one, another one, Steve Chu, some good people out there who are probably under consideration. So I'd be looking at some energy appointments, and of course that's the number one priority for President-elect Obama. He said that that'll be part of the stimulus, but also part of his long-term cap and trade program.
Great. Well, thank you, Faz. Great to talk to you, and we'll do it again next week.
Okay. Thank you, Peter.
Faz Shakir from the Center for American Progress in Washington. Coming up next, we'll have a lively discussion about bailouts with Professor Robert Auerbach from the University of Texas. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by New York Life Insurance Company. Peace of mind can be as close as the nearest New York Life agent. That's why New York Life is the company you keep. And by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech. I'm Charles Osgood. Classic economic theory tells us the price of anything is determined by the interaction of supply and demand. In the case of the housing bust, prices have fallen because there are too many houses on the market right now. Supply is up. People can't get mortgages, so demand is down. That's why the Fed's move last week was so welcome.
It's generally just good news. Everything is more affordable.
And it's why the financial industry is lobbying the Treasury now to buy mortgage-backed securities from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That, says Greg McBride of Bankrate.com, would be a win-win situation.
Much like the Federal Reserve announcement a week ago that drove mortgage rates down very sharply, any plan by the Treasury that would also drive mortgage rates down would help anybody who's buying a home or planning to do so, anyone trying to sell a home.
More after this. The most common cause of blindness in people age 60 and over is a chronic condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, AMD. It begins with symptoms including wavy lines, hazy vision, and blurriness. So if you're not seeing clearly, see an eye doctor. Get checked out right away, because early detection followed by proper treatment by a retina specialist is key. This message was brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech.
Experience the joy of designing your own ring at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
That's Jared!
Let the experts at Jared show you how easy it is to create an engagement ring that reflects your own personal style. Choose from their popular settings in platinum or hundreds of settings in gold. Then select the perfect diamond from thousands at Jared in a wide variety of shapes and sizes to create a ring that's yours and yours alone.
It can only be Jared!
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com.
Theory says that anything that makes buying cheaper will encourage buyers. That's why the Fed move was good, says Greg McBride.
Now the people coming through the living room have more buying power at their disposal. Your house is now more affordable at lower mortgage rates than it was at higher mortgage rates. And that's what's needed to soak up some of the inventory of unsold homes that we currently see.
And the industry would love to see the Treasury Department move to help some homeowners who can handle it, to take pressure off by refinancing.
Bringing fixed mortgage rates down even further would enable them, provided that they have some equity in the home and that they're on time with their payments, to be able to refinance into a fixed rate loan that would be sustainably affordable.
That's the way, or so they say, recovery begins. When nobody loses, everybody wins.
And if you're looking to sell your home, it opens the pool up of more borrowers who can qualify for a mortgage at a set payment and buy your house.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Live.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Big Three execs drove themselves in hybrids from Motown to Washington to tell us... almost at the end of the world.
Why does the sea rush to shore? Don't they know it's the end of the world? Cause you don't love me anymore.
I'm not too sympathetic to the big three automakers scrounging for cash, looking to us to bail them out from their mistakes. We're going to get a perspective right now from Professor Robert Auerbach. He's been on our program before. He's a professor of public affairs at the LBJ School at the University of Texas in Austin, the real oasis in the great state of Texas. And he served for 11 years on the House Banking Committee under Henry Gonzalez, a great congressman from Texas, who blew the lid off the savings and loan crisis and was a staunch progressive on so many other issues. The professor is also the author of Deception and Abuse at the Fed, Henry B. Gonzalez Battles Alan Greenspan's Bank. Professor, welcome back.
Oh, thank you for the very nice introduction.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and I appreciate you joining me today. As I alluded, I don't have a lot of sympathy for bailing out or bridge loans, as they're described, for the big three automakers in Detroit. First of all, there's a Me Too game that's being played that I'm not comfortable with. Ford has enough cash to get through the foreseeable future, yet they don't want to be left behind, and so they're asking to get a line of credit. General Motors, I would accept their prognosis that they are in trouble and that they've got to make some significant changes to go forward. And Chrysler's in kind of a different category. It's kind of an orphan after the Daimler divorce. And so, you know, I don't think we have a one-size-fits-all situation in Detroit. And most significantly, Professor, I don't believe that the sky is going to fall and the end of the world will come if there is no action on these bailout requests by the end of this lame duck session. What's your view?
Well, General Motors said they only have a month to go before they run out of cash. But I think politically, and you could also make a national security argument, there's no way they can let the automobile companies fail in the middle of this recession. So I think they'll get money. And they originally had $25 billion, and they may get the $34 billion that they want. But the real question, at least that'll get them through the next year. After that, I think you might be right. Unless there's a complete reorganization and something dramatically different happens, I think they'll be back again.
Well, I used, and you're, I believe, old enough to recognize this tune, Jan and Dean's Dead Man's Curve. You remember that one?
No.
Well, the line is, you won't come back from Dead Man's Curve. And I believe that Detroit is around that bend. And that what we're doing is propping up the status quo without what I think is the necessary protection for the workforce. And this is my top priority, Professor, in terms of Detroit. I believe that we should offer a significant cushion, not only to the UAW members, but the thousands, if not millions, of non-union people who work in the auto parts industries and the whole streams that feed the giant assembly lines in Detroit and often now offshore. And I think that we need to protect that workforce because they, to me, are the victims here. And I think that if we give them significant transition benefits, that if we give them first call on green energy jobs, either making electric cars or making the infrastructure to transmit renewable resource-based power from wind or solar, that those are the kinds of win-win scenarios that can help us out of the current crisis. I think that Detroit is asking for a Band-Aid, and I believe Congress will throw something at them. I think that will probably happen. But fundamentally, I see this as the crisis and the opportunity to really shut the door on the mistakes of the past and try to regroup and rebuild even at this most difficult time.
Right, and I would add to your list... the people, the workers that are out on their pension, they were guaranteed pension.
Yeah.
There are many more than are now working at the big three auto companies. That ought to be taken over. The pension should be taken over by the government. We have a guarantee entity in the government to take over pensions. That should be done. There's something like three times as many people on pensions as actually working there. We can't just pull the rug on those people.
Well, I have one in mind. It's Uncle Charlie, who retired from Ford about 20 years ago. And he said they call him once a month to see if he's still alive, and they have to send him the check. He's pushing 90. And I believe that we should not break the contract that he had with the employer when he retired. The problem we have is that the pension bailout fund is way overextended. The airlines dumped all their obligations there, and many companies are following suit.
One argument you could make, that if we gave them $34 billion, I know most of the public in a recent survey doesn't want to do that. But you have to look at what we've given the banks. Citigroup got $45 billion, and they should have been broken up in 1999 when they were asking the government to pass a bill so that Citigroup could be formed and buy all these financial companies. Obviously, they've done a terrible job. And the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which regulates them, should also be punished. We should get independent regulators running the banks. But $45 billion went to Citigroup, just one bank.
Yeah. That's just the cash component. We also assume $300 billion in liabilities at Citi.
Right.
And these far exceed the current market cap of these companies. And coming back to Detroit for a moment, this is a point that Michael Moore has made online, and I saw him on television last night. He is saying, look, the current value, according to the stock market, of General Motors is $3 billion. Now, how do you collateralize a loan of even $12 billion that they're asking for right now against a $3 billion net worth? No, nobody can borrow money on that basis.
Oh, I know.
So it's upside down. And
did you see Michael Moore's comment? And they've been blasting it all over the Wall Street Journal today in the editorial page.
No, I didn't see it there.
He said, essentially, you've got to buy American and be a good citizen. And he went and bought a Chrysler. And unfortunately, it doesn't. It's about 12 times it won't start, but he's going to keep it.
Yeah.
He gave it. It's just an awful ad.
Well, it is. And while we're talking about advertising, the big three execs figured out their blunder, and they drove in hybrids to Washington, a nifty little stunt. But when you watch the coverage on CNN of the bailout, once an hour or more, you will see a commercial from General Motors offering you a deep discount on a Hummer. It's the Hummer Red Tag Sale.
Right.
Now, their sales were off 41% in November. Consumers are sending a message. Your cars suck. And not all of them do, Professor. I actually am a lucky guy, and I drive new cars to test them for a radio feature I do. And
right.
I don't believe that everything that's made in Detroit is crap. It's the stuff they promote, the heavy trucks, the SUVs, and in this case, the Hummer, where they are way out of touch with their consumer base. And this kind of off-key approach at such a critical time is really unforgivable. I mean, their ad agency should have been fired on Monday.
But the problem is, if they go to sedans, which some of them are going to do now, and make more efficient sedans, I think they'll be beaten by the competition. Because they make their money now on SUVs and trucks, Jeeps. It's going to be very hard to go into small sedans and come out ahead. They'll really have to downsize those companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that inevitable?
Yes.
This is the thing, and this is where I feel a little uncomfortable, because I know I'm out of step with a lot of my center-left pro-labor friends. But I really think the most compassionate thing we can do in this case is face reality. And that is, Detroit needs a huge makeover. And the only way it's going to occur is under duress. They're not going to do this voluntarily. Rick Wagoner is not going to suddenly see the light as he's driving back in his Malibu hybrid to Detroit. And so we got to throw these bums out, and we have to find a way. I don't know if you put them into receivership, or, you know, we run an American Idol style campaign where we get we let Americans elect the next chairman of General Motors.
Yeah, but the only thing is we can't put millions out on the street during a recession because there's no way we'll be able to take care of these people.
Well, but that's why I suggest that the first priority is the workforce.
Right.
That's the progressive approach here, is to protect them and propel them toward a meaningful future. And I believe if we have that workforce, and, for example, one of my guests recently suggested that the U.S. government, instead of just giving money to Detroit, should place advance orders for electric cars or plug-in hybrids like the Volt, like the Ford Escape. I've driven that for the last 3 years. That is one of the best things coming out of Ford right now.
Right.
And so instead of
handing... Do you like the Fusion?
The Fusion is a good car.
We
bought a Focus for my stepson recently. It's got 34 miles to the gallon, which ain't bad for Detroit.
Right.
And so it's not, this is why I played the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. And the whole idea of the corporate structure in this country with the bankruptcy laws is that when a company fails, it is broken up and the parts are valuable to somebody else. And what we see here is the specter of the federal government providing money to General Motors that they will use to shaft their workers by shutting down Saturn or selling it off at a loss and compressing their brands and their manufacturing lines. And I don't really want to be a party to that.
Right. What I think one solution, possible solution that some people have suggested is for the Congress to pass a law, which is equivalent to a bankruptcy law, but isn't quite there yet, in which it allows General Motors to renegotiate its contracts, make that legal, and to slowly downsize. They could pass a law and put the ultimate control of the downsizing in the hands, say, of a federal judge, similar to bankruptcy, but not bankruptcy.
Yeah.
They would continue. It would be a special law for the big three that would allow them to continue to operate as long as they downsize to the point where they're profitable and at the same time take care of their workers.
Mm-hmm.
Congress ought to make a law. Now, all they've done today is essentially say the big three said they would accept an oversight board, but I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at the oversight board for the Wall Street bailout.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, these are tragic jokes, and we have $8.5 billion that has been promised or already flowed from Treasury, not just the $700 billion authorized by Congress. We have the games like the $140 billion tax law change that was snuck through that benefits banks and is a $2 billion hit to California, which is already reeling. And
right.
So, you know, I do understand your parity point. That we've thrown so much money.
I have a special interest in California because I taught at the University of California, and I'm in their retirement system.
Oh, you're a PERS beneficiary.
CalPERS.
Right.
And I certainly hope California makes it.
Okay, well, we'll do our best to preserve it for you. Here's Drew in Monterey listening on our flagship KRXA. Go ahead, Drew.
Hey, Peter. Thank you. You know, I think as an act of good faith, I'm actually very conflicted with this because I just think manufacturing capabilities is extremely vital for our economy. It's vital for our military to have strong manufacturing capability. So I'm a little conflicted, but I think before they get a penny, as an act of good faith, every single corporate jet, every single luxury car, every mansion they own, every summer home they own, needs to be sold. You know, in the big picture, that's not going to make a big dent in the money that is being loaned. But you know what? You take $20 million for a jet here, $3 million for a home there, and you start adding it up, and it becomes a lot of money, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I agree with you. I think these are fringe issues. They do matter in the court of public opinion, and they certainly look bad at certain moments. But to me, if I compare whether Rick Wagner came in on a corporate jet or whether he authorized this ad campaign promoting Hummers to a nation that doesn't want them, it's the latter decision that I have more doubts about and that really make the case that he's got to go. And we need a whole new management team to go in there and restructure this top to bottom. But it has to be with protections for the workforce. Go ahead, Professor.
There is a national security argument. If we close down the big three and the steel mills start closing up all over the country, mm-hmm. we won't have any manufacturing facilities here. There's a strong argument to keep them going.
I'm in favor of that, you know, up to a point, but we have so many idle plants in this country. Just recently I was in Detroit and I drove through Toledo. There's a huge Jeep plant there that was manufacturing Jeep Cherokees just 2 years ago. And if somebody wants to invest in the future of manufacturing in this country, there are plenty of facilities that are available. What we have to do is recognize that the current incumbents in the auto industry are really not competent to get through this crisis, restructure for a new green economy. And I think that we can preserve the manufacturing capability without bailing out Rick Wagoner's ass.
Nice way to put it.
Drew, thanks for your call. And Professor, stay with us. We'll continue in just a moment. Our guest is Robert Auerbach, Professor of Public Affairs at the LBJ School at the University of Texas in Austin. 888-5, Peter B. is my number. If you think I'm wrong, I want you to get on the phone and call me right now. And Rick Wagoner, if you're listening in your Chevy Malibu Hybrid, pick up the phone. It's 888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show.
We at KRXA 540 would like to take this opportunity to wish you and your loved ones the very best during this holiday season. From all of us to all of you, happy holidays.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, the holiday season. Poinsettias, holiday bouquets, centerpieces, garland, the scent of pine and spruce. Beautiful. Nothing gets a body and the spirit more than getting flowers, unless it's giving them. Just ask the floral experts at Ferrari Florists and Gifts. Every year we're as busy as elves helping people send their happiest wishes to friends, family, and colleagues. Everybody loves a gift of flowers. We sure can work some holiday magic to spruce up your home, too.
Tis the season to send flowers and warm hearts for the holidays. Call Ferrari Florist and Gifts at 831-460-7000. Visit our website at www.ferrariflorist.com or stop by our shop at 514 Front Street, Santa Cruz. Ferrari Florist and Gifts, experts in the art of expression.
It's an all-new Planet Cruise comedy show at the Columbia Jazz Center in Santa Cruz this Friday, December 5th, 8 p.m. This Friday, we will have liberal comedy songwriter phenom Roy Zimmerman, along with the Jewish family comic Jeff Applebaum, science comedian Brian Mallow, the young rising star Grant Lyon, the great Morgani, the Planetoid Band, sketch comedy with sound effects master Sven Davis, Lisa Licious, the spontaneous applause sign lady, all at the next live Planet Cruise, Friday, December 5th at the Columba. That's at 320 Cedar Street in Santa Cruz. Tickets $18 in advance, save $5. At Streetlight Records, Gateways Books in Santa Cruz, or online at planetcruise.org. Come on down to the Planet Cruise Comedy Hour at the Columba. Laugh your glutes off.
There's more than one side to contemporary affairs. In fact, there's usually more than two sides. On Thursday nights at 10, listen in on KRXA 540, and you'll hear at least four. You'll hear the perspectives of Mark Leonard, Tony Rudy, Billy Sunshine, and me, Jack Hart. We have guests bring their own expertise and experience to their analysis of current events. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for a different perspective. And on September 4th, our show will expand to 2 hours, and we'll start at 9 in the evening and go through to 11. Join us here on KRXA 540.
Didn't wanna have to do it. Didn't wanna have to break your heart. Didn't wanna have to do it. I kept a hoping from the very start that you.
I love to hear these free market capitalists who made millions, if not billions, on Wall Street. I didn't want to do a bailout. We just had to, because otherwise the system would have melted down. We're talking with Robert Auerbach, professor of public affairs, LBJ School there at the University of Texas in Austin, the author of the book Deception and Abuse at the Fed. He certainly knows a lot more than I do about the Fed. And let me ask you about the appointment of Timothy Geithner as Obama's incoming Secretary of Treasury. In my view, Professor, his fingerprints are all over this mucked-up bailout so far. And Obama sells this to us as, well, he won't need any preparation.
That is true. He's very, look, I used to work at the Treasury during the Reagan administration. He's very good in the technical parts, I'm sure. And I've heard him say some very good suggestions about cleaning up these derivatives. The thing I wonder about, and I don't know him well enough, does he have a strong enough personality to stand up against some of the other people? And what is his philosophy? What you know, he's spending all this money. Is anybody worried about the fact that we have trillions of dollars in expenditures, and sooner or later we're going to have to raise either print money or sell bonds to China to keep us going?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard anybody talk about that. And, you know, the Federal Reserve has lent out now more than $2 trillion. And Bloomberg News wanted to know who got that money.
Right.
And what kind of collateral did you get for it? And the Fed refused. So they did a freedom. I was on with a reporter from there. They did a freedom of information request. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't. The Fed said, "We're not going to tell you." And so now they're in court trying to find out where $2 trillion went. Now $2 trillion is a lot of money to lend out without any paper trail for the public. I can understand you don't want to mention specific banks that may be in trouble. But at least the chairman of the banking committees, Barney Frank and Mr. Dodd, they should be informed exactly what's going on and what kind of collateral we're spending.
So, Professor, how does this differ from your experience with the SNL bailout of the 80s? We formed the Resolution Trust Corporation, parked all the bad assets there, and I actually went to an auction and tried to buy a troubled savings and loan, and I was rejected in favor of, somebody who was already in the industry. Now, frankly, I wasn't qualified, but, the way that process worked was they basically just flipped the troubled institutions to existing stronger ones and led to the further consolidation of the industry.
Exactly. We lost 269 banks failed back then and much of the savings and loan industry, and I thought maybe we had learned something from that. Mr. Gonzalez was passing bills to get them bailed out. It cost about $125 billion. That looks like peanuts to them.
Yeah.
But I don't think we learned anything because after all that happened, we still found that the examination of the New York banks for the Federal Reserve, the examiners were taking gifts. And when Henry Gonzalez wrote to Gerald Corgan, the head of the New York Bank at the time, are you taking gifts from these big banks? How can you examine these trillion-dollar banks unless there's an arm's length? Gerald Corrigan wrote back, look it, they were only given a handful of sporting tickets. And Henry Gonzalez just had to hit the roof on that one.
Wow.
And then Alan Greenspan was there, and we said, look, how is it possible to examine these trillion-dollar banks when you allow the examiners to go in there with their resume looking for a job?
Yeah.
And Greenspan wrote back, I have it in my book, he said, look, it's not uncommon for someone that wants a job in the banking industry to get a job at the Fed. What are you guys upset about?
Now, Professor, I got about 40 seconds here. The one bailout I'm in favor of is a transfer of money to the states. I think that would have a good effect and prevent some of the worst potential impacts of this downturn.
Oh, it's essential, or else we're going to lose a lot of essential services in the states. And California is heavily hit now. I think they had to reduce the amount of students they can have out there by 10,000.
Yeah, we got a freeze on enrollment.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always the leading state in the country for enrollment at a low fee.
Yeah.
And they gave education to a lot of California citizens. I just hate to see that happen.
Yeah. Professor, always a pleasure, and thanks for putting up with my rants.
Oh, thank you.
All right. We'll talk again. Thanks. That's Robert Auerbach, professor of public affairs, LBJ School, UT Austin. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, preserved as a podcast. The link's on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Driving for dollars on Capitol Hill.
They came with new plans and a new attitude.
I heard your message loud and clear.
But automakers now need $34 billion. I'm Howard Arenstein in Washington.
Retailers had their worst month since 1969.
Consumers are just not comfortable with opening up their wallets right now and shopping.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. After arriving in Washington by car, no corporate jet, executives of General Motors, Chrysler, and Ford went back before the Senate Banking Committee today to explain their reorganization plans and to make their case for $34 billion in government loans.
The three CEOs returned humbled to Capitol Hill.
You are clear that the business model needs to change. I couldn't agree more.
We plan on launching additional small fuel efficient vehicles.
We obviously have a lot of things that we're proud of, and there are also mistakes.
Economist Mark Zandi of Moody's said lawmakers have little choice.
Bankruptcy at this point in time would be cataclysmic for the economy. So I think you need to help them now.
But Alabama's Republican Senator Richard Shelby is very hesitant.
$34 billion is probably just the beginning. Is that correct?
I think that's a high probability.
Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
The auto executives go before a House panel tomorrow. At the White House, spokeswoman Dana Perino said she didn't want to pass judgment on their reorganization strategies.
I think it's too early to give these plans a grade. They've just put them forward. They are detailed.
I'm Dan Revive. Beyond the auto industry, a wider survey of around 160 chief executives finds they've turned deeply negative on America's economic outlook. The Business Roundtable expects sales to be down in the coming 6 months, and a large majority expect to fire employees.
Just today, AT&T, DuPont, and Viacom announced plans to cut 15,000 jobs. Now this.
How to perform holiday magic. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot. Get exclusive holiday decorations like stunning Christmas trees, ornaments, lights, and more. Step 2. Create a holiday wonderland inside and out. Step 3. Notice how it all fits nicely within your budget, which is every bit as magical as flying reindeer.
Right now, get up to 50% off select holiday decorations at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Stocks fell in the final hour of trading on Wall Street. The Dow lost 216 points. Analysts blame worry about tomorrow's unemployment report, which is expected to show many more Americans out of work. Today's report on retail sales is dismal. November was the worst month since 1969. The one exception, says Aaron Armendinger of the Wharton School, is discount retailer Walmart.
People do know that they can generally get the best prices at Walmart. They can get food there. They can get cosmetics there, they can get consumer electronics there. They can pretty much go there for everything now.
Walmart sales were up 3.4%. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke is worried about foreclosures.
Despite good faith efforts by both the private and public sectors, the foreclosure rate remains too high, with adverse consequences for both those directly involved and for the broader economy. More needs to be done.
He's calling on Congress to relax the terms of the Hope for Homeowners program, which helps people refinance to more affordable federally insured mortgages. Iraqi leaders today finalized the agreement with Washington on the future of U.S. forces in their country. It sets a three-year timetable for withdrawal. A warning today that thousands of soldiers who suffered head wounds will need care for the rest of their lives. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has that.
Troops with moderate to severe brain injuries face an increased risk of dementia, Parkinson's disease, depression, and other long-term effects. And an expert panel also warns that when soldiers are exposed to just the force of a blast,
seen stars, walked around dazed, and then went back at it,
they may have hidden, undiagnosed wounds. Panel chair Dr. George Rutherford says this Department of Veterans Affairs-sponsored study prepares the nation for costly disability claims in coming years.
Somebody who has Parkinson's disease 20 years from now, who had a severe head injury in Iraq, is that related?
Nearly 6,000 U.S. military personnel have suffered a brain injury in Iraq and Afghanistan, the signature wound of these wars. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
When it comes to holiday recipes, some search engines get you lost in all the links, but not Yahoo Search. To prove it, we switched Amy's Google page with Yahoo and filled her kitchen with live turkeys.
Oh my!
Wait till you see how Yahoo Search can help with recipes.
Did that turkey just type pumpkin pie?
Yep, which instantly gives us this drop-down menu.
Suggesting a ton of recipes and cooking ideas. Helpful.
Cool. Now, how about dinner?
Switch to Yahoo Search and get straight to your answers. Start now at yahoo.com.
Yahoo!
Maybe it's just me being a coach and all, but I thought winning was supposed to be hard. So Staples is doing this gifted for free thing where 10,000 people are going to win their entire purchase. GPSs, digital cameras. You know what? You're awesome at listening to the radio. You deserve a trophy or something, too. I mean, everyone else is winning these days. 10,000 winners, everything in the cards. Where's the challenge, Staples? Go to giftedforfree.com if you absolutely must. No purchase necessary. Go to giftedforfree.com for official rules. Must be 18 or older. Ends 12/24/08. I win.
Look at the...
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media.
Really?
Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Yabba-dabba-doo, we are live in Boston. This is day four on AM 1510. People are starting to call. That means you're listening. We like that. I got a free DVD offer for anybody who calls from the 617 or another New England area code. Every week about this time, we set aside an hour to talk with Scott Dick. He's our official contributor on military and veterans affairs because he's been there and I haven't. Scott served in the Marine Corps back as the Vietnam War was ending, jumped over to the Army, served in Bosnia, and retired at the rank of major. He is what he called a tanker. He served in that wing, that division of our armed forces. And Scott helps me understand the acronyms and the Pentagon thinking that often eludes or escapes me. Scott, great to have you on the program again today.
Thanks, Peter. It often eludes me, too.
And say hello to Boston!
Hi, Boston. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's really great to officially be coast-to-coast. We've got a few places to fill in between, but we can now make the claim, if only for marketing purposes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean...
Cool.
Yeah.
I think it's cool, Peter, and I'm really glad that... We get a chance to you get a chance to expose me to the Boston audience.
Yeah. Well, they're going to hear about you this hour, and what we invite you to do is call, particularly if you served in uniform. Maybe you're presently in the armed forces. You are welcome to participate, but anyone can call. And if you have questions or comments about the issues we raise this hour on military and veterans matters, then join us at 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free 888-573-8372, and my email is peter@peterbcollins.com if you prefer to drop a note or if you're listening on a podcast after the fact. Well, Scott, the big military action was last week in Mumbai, India, and hundreds of people were killed or injured there. It was a scene of devastation, and we now know that it was a maximum of 15 commandos who came in by water to the port of Mumbai, and at least 10 of those were armed gunmen. One survived and was captured. It is believed that the other 9 are dead, and the balance of that alleged team is still unaccounted for. I've heard conflicting reports about whether there actually were 15, and the Indian authorities are trying to preserve calm and say, well, we got them all, but it's not clear to me that there couldn't be a second wave of assaults there in Mumbai or nearby.
It's an absolute mess. And looking at the training of those people, I thought it was the first telltale for me, Peter, was the fact that they were looking for Americans. They claimed to be looking for Americans and Brits with passports, but there were several British hostages who, after showing themselves to be British, they weren't killed and they thought they'd be killed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me that they were actually targeting Indians, but used the American and British passport thing as kind of a ruse. It was sort of a strange development. And then the fact that they were so well-trained struck me. And then when I looked at the video, especially from the BBC, of the Indian forces, I was sort of surprised at how little equipment, the mishmash of uniforms, you know, the lack of any kind of, it looked like leadership cohesion, you know, police officers wearing tennis shoes. And it wasn't, I don't think it was the fact that them responding so quickly that they couldn't get out in full uniform. You know, police officers out, body armor, et cetera.
Well, the elite fast reaction force, and I don't know what it's called in the Indian military, but it was delayed by 9 hours in its response time because they couldn't find a plane to put them on to bring them to Mumbai.
And the military, even though it's a nuclear-armed country, the military got off trucks wearing World War I helmets. And I didn't know, I said on my show, I didn't know if it was because that was a ceremonial unit that they had put into action or if they are really that far backward.
Mm-hmm.
World War I, you know, the flat bowl kind of upside-down pasta bowl.
Yeah.
I was really shocked, and then I saw the police officers who were the SWAT team, if you will, who were not wearing body armor. They had old military steel pots, and it wasn't until very later when the commandos came in that they even mm-hmm. got close and were wearing Kevlars, and some had body armor, some didn't, etc. So it was, you know, they knew exactly where to hit because of the mishmash and probably there's coordination issues between the paramilitary and the military.
Well, there are a number of things that I've heard, and let me tick them off and then get your reaction. One, that relatively simple matters like telescopic sights and other, you know, high-powered surveillance devices to try to identify what room in the Taj or the Oberoi hotels these commandos were holed up in. There were warnings delivered by the United States and perhaps other intelligence services to India at least a week before this that they were picking up, you know, signals or indications of a potential attack in India. Now, it's a huge country, and I do understand that if these warnings were not explicit or geographically specific, it might have been no action possible to be taken anyway. And then on the Public News Hour Wednesday night, a British reporter did a good critique of the Indian Navy. Now, to be fair, the Indian Ocean is huge. The coastline of India is massive. There is a lot of local traffic there of fishermen and trawlers going from one local point to another. But it turns out that these alleged commandos believed to come from Pakistan. We know at least the one guy captured claims that they were trained in Pakistan. They came by sea. They hijacked a vessel that was then stopped by the Indian Coast Guard. And they inspected it, found the papers were in order, and let these guys go.
Now, that I had not heard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
Let me go up to the top of the list. The scopes and size, that's inexcusable. For a country that has spent billions on their nuclear weapons program, for the police and military not to have the proper on-the-ground equipment just reeks of, you know, the little guy, they don't need that. They don't need scopes. They don't need commo gear. They don't need body armor because we have to build this nuclear program so we can be a first-world country.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that so many times in our own military where they go for big-ticket items and then we send troops into combat. Wait, let's see now, Peter, where can we think about when that last happened? They send our troops into combat without the right body or vehicle armor.
Yeah, that hasn't happened for a long time.
Yeah, that's definitely not a 21st century deal. And speaking of aberrations in the 21st century, the most powerful nation on this planet was also warned that they were going to be attacked by air.
Only 44 times.
And they did nothing about it.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised that the Indians couldn't do any better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, it would have made us look like idiots if they would have been able to thwart that attack based on information, the intelligence that we gave them.
Yeah.
So that's those. Then the Navy, that's, once again, you know, the ministers in India who are resigning in disgrace. I wish our country played a little more closely to that. If you fail in the U.S., you get a Medal of Freedom.
Yeah.
If you fail in India, you get fired.
Mm-hmm. Well, just a quick aside, George Bush is doing his farewell interviews, his exit interviews, and getting all wrapped up trying to blame the intelligence community for his mistakes in taking us into Iraq. And let's see, Wednesday night, John Stewart did a great job of sending that up because he cut from Bush's excuse to a picture of him placing the Medal of Honor around the neck of George Tenet, the former CIA director who said, oh, it's a slam dunk, W.
This is an administration that is a pathological aversion to admitting that they've made mistakes. And so he faults the intelligence that he and Dick Cheney created through the intelligence echo chamber.
Right.
And we know how that works, Peter. We float intel bits and bytes and drabs into the international intelligence circuit, and then it gets echoed back to us from a different level in a different way, and then we can cherry pick that and turn that into a case why we should attack a country that did us no harm.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear Bush talking about the intel mistake, and then Rice, remember when she said we made tactical mistakes in Iraq and that's why we are where we are.
Right.
A couple of years ago she wanted to blame it on the military and the troops on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That went over like a lead balloon, so we'll have to see how this Bush and the intel. His only regret, the intel mistakes.
Yeah, we'll hit that a little bit later in the hour. Now, coming back to the problems there in Mumbai, first of all, does it astound you that 10 commandos could conduct so much violence in a relatively short period of time and remain at bay for almost 60 hours?
Well, that's about the size of a Special Forces team, and it does astound me. And when you have troops on the ground, the police officers, you know, constables and local police, and I don't know how many levels of bureaucracy they have and how many different police forces and who gets the fancy uniforms and who draws the money, because there's always some police force that gets more money, some part of the police, you know, SWAT or
mm-hmm.
feds or whatever.
Right.
So I don't know how that's cut up in Mumbai, but you know, did they have there's revenue police even like in Italy? They have they do nothing but look after taxes and stuff.
Mm-hmm, right.
So all of that, pinning them down and finding them, I could see where you know they could hold out for 60 hours, especially if you're talking about a very technologically challenged force with all the cross problems they had,
mm-hmm.
and then about 45, 48 hours, 72 hours starting to get into cleaning things up.
Well, and to be fair, their tactics really thwarted any effort because there were civilians, innocent people, either as hostages or just nearby. And so, you know, if they had attempted to blast the hotels or launch missiles or rockets at presumed locations, they would have had a lot of civilian casualties.
And once the pros came in, I heard a report on the BBC once again, eyewitness from a family, and the mom was saying that the military commandos called them on their cell phone, gave them a code word, and said they would knock on the door, they'd give them the code word, and then they could unlock the door and come out. And that's exactly what happened, and they appeared at the door exactly when they said they're going to be there. And we can't fault the courage of the Indian police. 17 officers died. That means they were leading the troops from the front.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an amazing statistic when we're talking about, I think, 60 Indian police and troops were killed, 17 of those officers. That's important. That's an important statistic not to forget.
We'll take a break and return and talk about the implications trying to keep peace between Pakistan and India and how that affects the United States. We have lost a supply route into Afghanistan through the Khyber Pass, at least temporarily. We'll pick up there as we continue. Your calls and comments, questions, welcome. 888-5-PETER-B. You dial 1-888-573-8372. We're talking with Scott Dick this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale with The Sheila Show, Saturdays 3 to 5 p.m. For the next few weeks, college basketball will be airing during my show, so please, if you tune in and hear basketball, listen in on Sundays from 3 to 5, The Sheila Show, where we talk about everything and help you get through life's toughest challenges with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Princess Monterey Whale Watching on Old Fisherman's Wharf in Monterey. Remember, if you hear basketball during my show on Saturday, tune in Sundays 3 to 5 for The Sheila Show. See ya.
Hi, I'm Audrey Williams.
And I'm Melvin Williams.
Check out our new show, Holy Hip Hop on the Block, every Saturday from 10 to 12 noon, right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Check us out.
K
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on the 1, just south of Ocean Avenue, we have a traffic hazard. There is an injured dog in the road, so look out for him. Also on the 1 at Flanders Drive, there is a two-vehicle collision with no injuries. The vehicles are in lane number 1 and unable to move. In Santa Cruz, on the northbound 1, just south of Roach Road, there is a man on a bike in the roadway, so watch out for him. And in the Hollister-Gilroy area on Little Panoche Road, just north of Vasquez Creek Road, we have a traffic hazard, and CHP is on the way there. In weather, right now we are enjoying a gorgeous clear day. Highs are in the 60s with lows in the 40s. Sunset is at 4:51 p.m. tonight. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Enjoy this beautiful afternoon, everyone. The Peter B. Cullen Show will be right back.
It's the Peter B. Show. We continue our discussion of military and veterans issues, and you're welcome to join us at 888-5 Peter B. Scott Dick is my contributor on these matters, and he continues with us. So, Scott, we're getting mixed messages from Pakistan. The new civilian government there is very fragile. It's Asif Ali Zardari, the widower of Benazir Bhutto. And we've kind of forgotten about his corruption scandals of the past and his blocking the return of the Supreme Court in Pakistan. But on the one hand, Pakistan officially says we're not responsible. India hasn't proven that these commandos were authorized by the Pakistani government. And that's a very narrow denial that they're trying to maintain, because nobody's saying that the ISI sponsored this, but the ISI, their secret service, has, or their intelligence operation, has been certainly connected to this group in the past. Now, the flip side of that is this little news item: Pakistani airstrikes and a suspected suicide attack left 34 dead near the Afghan border on Wednesday. The Pakistanis launched airstrikes in two areas of the Momand border region, killing 30 suspected militants. So they are responding to the push from the United States and India to do something about these terrorist training camps and these splinter groups that operate in the northwest region of Pakistan. How do you think the United States can operate here to prevent a nuclear exchange between India and Pakistan over this conflict in Mumbai?
Well, very carefully. I was just thinking of what you were talking about this. You have a weak central government that is, you know, always under sort of the watchful eye of the military. And could this have been a way to weaken the civilian government even farther, to create this Indian threat and then use that as an excuse to get rid of the civil government and take over, which
would
be the first time?
That is the pattern in Pakistan, yes. The generals ultimately return to power.
Because it makes no sense for those terrorists to go into Mumbai and say that they were targeting Americans and Brits in a sort of an al-Qaeda kind of attack, and then really what they did is just gun down average Indians walking on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so kind of pointless. You know, they didn't rob any banks that we know about. Maybe they did. They just don't know yet. But they didn't. It's a financial capital. I don't think they crippled the economy. They went in and raised absolute hell, killed a bunch of people, and what was the point?
Well, the projection of fear. And as you point out, who gets, you know, who ends up being held responsible for this could double back. And it could be an effort by the Pakistani military to create a provocation that allows them to seize power once again. I think that's a very interesting possibility. Here's Bob in Eureka listening on KGOE. Hi, Bob.
Hello. I wanted to throw out something to Scott, see what he thought. I read a lot about this on the Internet, and one of the analysts that I read thought that the commandos that went into Mumbai, obviously having had combat experience because they were very well-behaved in what they were doing, probably achieved that experience in Afghanistan, then were sent to India to foment this outrage, that perhaps this is Al-Qaeda inspired to try and get India and Pakistan to do what they've always done, which is rush to their mutual border, thus relieving pressure on the border areas so that Al-Qaeda would only have to deal with us coming across from Afghanistan.
Well, you're certainly right about the result, because Pakistan is redeploying forces away from Waziristan and to its border with India. Scott?
Well, that's just the natural reaction of the Pakis. I think there's an expression that I can't really say on the radio, but basically what it means is don't, you know, drop loads of manure in your own foxhole. And since the Taliban were created by Pakistani intelligence, it seems like that would be a double cross on the Pakistanis. I'm just sort of thinking, Peter, about how this is they attacked the Jewish center. Mm-hmm. And killed a few people there. I mean, important to everybody, but if you get the meaning of the larger scheme of things, that's not a whole lot of target.
Yeah.
They didn't kill the leaders of India. They didn't, you know, invade the parliament. They attacked people on the street,
mm-hmm.
ostensibly targeting Jews and Americans and Brits and then calling themselves out. Remember they said...
We'll talk more after the break. Oh, that's okay. Scott Dick. Bob, thanks for your call. More in a moment on the Peter B. Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The New Crusades. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. It's become an annual event in Washington State, the fight over the Christmas display at the state capitol. Once upon a time, a business group sponsored what they called a holiday tree, secular, completely legal. But in 2005, a Republican legislator said it was clearly a Christmas tree and should be called a Christmas tree, and so the state said, okay, call it a Christmas tree. The next year, rabbis wanted a menorah, and then a real estate agent wanted a nativity scene, which is definitely not secular, and so, facing a lawsuit, the state decided to allow religious displays from anyone. And this year, atheists from Wisconsin decided if there is going to be a menorah, a tree, and a nativity, we're putting up our atheist placard declaring religion to be a myth. Well, some talk show hosts can't stand that, and they blame Governor Christine Gregoire. Now, that doesn't surprise me. What did surprise me was that somebody apparently died and made them pope.
And this woman, this governor, he's a Catholic, I understand, is too cowardly to say anything about it?
Bill O'Reilly saying that she's a cowardly Catholic.
She says she's a Catholic, and I'll take her at her word, but...
And Kirby Wilbur questioning whether she's a Catholic at all.
She's compromising her faith. If she's a Catholic in good standing...
She's compromising her faith if she's a Catholic in good standing. Boy, if not popes, they must be archbishops at least, because they can declare who's a Catholic. And their edict is clear. She had better remove that atheist display and leave untouched the Christian and Jewish displays. And then, my fellow crusaders, we retake Jerusalem. And this time, we make it stick. Now this.
You've got spam in your email now.
Whoa! The holiday season is here, and with it, the onslaught of email-based spam, viruses, spoofing, phishing, and spyware attacks. Keep your business safe this holiday season by installing a Barracuda Spam Firewall, the world's number one selling anti-spam solution. With no software to install and no per-user fees, it's the simplest, most cost-effective way to stop dreaded holiday spam. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now for your free trial. 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggin' Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Family, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and will return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, Fresh Brewed Hawaiian Coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian Ice Cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
Go ahead, take a deep breath.
Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue our discussion of military and veterans issues. Your calls and comments welcome toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. Shout out to Boston. We got a free DVD offer still underway. You call into the program and get on the air. We'll ship you a DVD from our collection here. Today we're offering Burning the Future. It's called Coal in America. Again, my number for new listeners, 888-573-8372. As we mentioned, Scott Dick served in the military, both in the Marine Corps and the Army, retired at the rank of major. And he now hosts a great radio program on our flagship station in Monterey, California, every evening right after me, and it's called The Scott Dick Show. And if people want to reach out to you, Scott, what's the best email they can use?
Scott@scottdickshow.com.
Okay, that's pretty easy.
It is.
Now, before the break, we ran out of time as we were talking about Pakistan, and you offered an interesting theory there that the military, which has claimed power routinely, between bouts of attempted democracy in that country, may be behind this. And we know their discomfort with the U.S. raids. Earlier this week, we talked to Adrian Levy, the British reporter from The Guardian, who's an expert on Pakistan and just came back from the tribal regions. He was there only a week ago. And, Scott, I asked him, and I framed it this way. I said, you're not an American, and you're not in America, and I welcome your objective point of view. I said there have been more than 30 raids using Predator drones and, in two cases, American helicopter-borne troops that crossed the border into Pakistan. I said, what is the effect of that? And he said, Peter, it is devastating and it's negative. He said those who were not willing to support the Taliban and these other small Islamic militant groups, he said they now feel that they have no choice, that they must look for security and comfort to these groups because this outside force that sends rockets screaming from unmanned Predator drones that kill civilians and apparently do occasionally take out the intended targets have caused much more damage than just the, you know, physical damage that is produced. And so this is producing another reaction. And what you advance there about the Pakistani military, they are looking for ways to try to push back against the United States. And this new civilian government, Zardari, has raised numerous protests. But the American reporting indicates that there's a don't ask, don't tell policy, kind of a wink and nod understanding between Zardari and the Bush administration.
And the perception of that could be just the end of his administration, whether it's true or not. And as long as that's reported in American media, and you bet the Pakistanis are watching CNN International, and they get the same reports we get, and their grasp of English is as good as ours, especially among the elite. So there's no question that they're not getting our reporting at the same time, and that's probably just fueling the kind of paranoia, if it's paranoia, that this would bring. And the idea, I'm looking at the map of Afghanistan and Pakistan, it's typical for an administration that does not grasp geopolitics to conduct these kind of raids. And it's a huge propaganda campaign for anybody who has interest in minimizing the Pakistani government or support for the United States. Mm-hmm. It's a huge propaganda gain. It's just, it's been replayed through history, and it's typical of our administration, who doesn't grasp history, who's incurious about history, has never served a day in uniform to conduct these kind of raids and think that they might be effective because in the midst of all those collateral damage, arms and legs of innocent people, there are a few really al-Qaeda, you know, terrorists.
And so let's all practice together because we have to learn a new terrorist group name. It is Lashkar-e-Taiba. Lashkar, the letter E, Taiba, T-A-I-B-A. And this is a group that was once a cutout used by the Pakistani military. Musharraf, our poodle for a while, outlawed them with some fanfare in 2002. But there's no proof that he actually suppressed them or dismantled their operations. And so there is a history of Pakistan using these third parties in Kashmir and in Afghanistan. And so it's not a stretch, as you advanced, Scott, to believe that this commando raid was done in concert with the Pakistani military and that they hope to use this to reassert their power, if not boot out this quasi-democratic government headed by Zardari.
When you think of the beauty of this purely domestic, this purely Pakistani domestic event being conducted in the streets in India, and it's all about Pakistani domestic politics, it's breathtaking that, you know, 137 or whatever, 187 killed in India, and it's a small price to pay for the military in Pakistan to regain power.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. And, you know, the Indians aren't innocent in this with Kashmir and the Pakistanis. And Peter, there's no real good reason for the attack at the time. There's no, I have not seen any specific or important dates referenced. Remember September 17th? That was important for the PLO for a long time. And there, I just don't see. This is completely random.
Mm-hmm.
There's no holiday. They didn't attack during a festival. They weren't attacking the Hindu majority. None of that. It seemed totally random, especially from the Brit. They had him dead to rights. They knew he was a Brit, and they kept shooting Indians.
Mm-hmm. So, Scott, as we look at this, it certainly is complicated and very risky for the United States to take a position here and end up alienating or infuriating one of these nuclear-powered nations. And as we look at this right now, you know, the minimum we have in terms of fallout to the United States is the loss of an important supply route through Pakistan into the Khyber Pass and into Afghanistan. And with your map open there, what are our alternatives in terms of resupplying NATO and American forces in Afghanistan?
Well, there's always air. The closest distance between two points to Kabul is Peshawar, and those are little tiny roads. The other, you know, we have troops in Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, and so they can come that way, but there's no real direct routes. They have to come way in the north and then go through that hideous terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And given that the al-Qaeda operatives have been taken over about every other convoy anyway, going through the Khyber, the security that has been sent, or Pakistani security, is pretty much worthless, then they're flying, you know, things into Kabul, into Kandahar, and it's... they're certainly not going to bring anything through Iran. So that leaves...
And so if Obama wants to insert another couple of brigades there, they'll have to be brought in by air.
Yeah, that's the way they would anyway, to get into Kandahar to go through that in-country, you know, familiarization training.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else before we wrap up on the Mumbai attack?
No, there's one thing, Peter, that is... of concern to me, and a lot of times historically, these kinds of attacks, because it seems so random, was designed to test local defenses, which means it's bigger and better things to come. That's the only thing. It gave me goosebumps just thinking about that. It seems so random that it could be a test, and if it's a test, that means it's going to be big. That's the other part.
That is scary. And on the NewsHour Wednesday night on PBS, they interviewed a retired Navy admiral from the Indian Navy who said that it pained him to say it, but that he had to admit that they are no better protected a week after the attack than they were when it occurred. So the vulnerability remains, and your point is sad, but well taken. Now, let's take a look at one of the exit interviews that Bush is doing. He did a real tough one with his sister, Doro. You can imagine the questions that she peppered him with.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie Gibson, well, he's not a tough interviewer, but he asked questions that caused the president to squirm. And one of them was about those pesky WMD in Iraq. Let's listen to Bush's answer and then a comment that was issued on Thursday by Dana Perino in the White House.
You've always said there's no do-overs as president, if you had one.
I don't know. I mean, the biggest regret of all the presidency has to have been the intelligence failure in Iraq. A lot of people put their reputations on the line and said, you know, the weapons of mass destruction is a reason to remove Saddam Hussein. It wasn't just people in my administration. And, you know, that's not a do-over, I wish the intelligence had been different. I guess
if the intelligence had been right, would there have been an Iraq war?
If he had had weapons of mass destruction, would there have been a war?
Absolutely. No, if you had known, he didn't.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's an interesting question. It's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Just an interesting question. And while he's spinning in this direction, the counterspin comes from Karl Rove, who once again is blaming the intelligence community. And he said that there wouldn't have been a war if the intelligence authorities hadn't said that Saddam had WMD.
Of course, Peter, that's fuzzying up, where one person says one thing and then another person in the administration says exactly the opposite. So, depending on what soundbite you hear, you'll never know. It's a bureaucratic attempt at trying to whitewash his legacy, part of the burnishing of the information environment to make him look less of a failure.
It's a
whitewash.
The control measures at the White House are breaking down because you're about to hear a clip from Dana Perino, and she responded to a question from Helen Thomas, who had been banished. Helen is in her 80s. She is a real, you know, stalwart, old-line reporter, unafraid to ask any question.
You mean a journalist?
Yeah, a journalist. And so here's an exchange. We'll see what we hear here between Dana Perino, and it started with a question from Helen.
Helen, in any of the recent interviews, has the president ever expressed regret over attacking Iraq? And also, is Karl Rove in charge of promoting his legacy?
Okay, I'll just repeat the question here because it was a little hard to hear. She asked if Bush has expressed regret over Iraq and if Karl Rove is in charge of his legacy, and she answered, no, I am, and laughed.
I have a team of people who's helping talk about the president's decisions that he's made over the past 8 years. I think there's no doubt that it has been a consequential 8 years where huge things have happened.
Yeah.
The biggest terrorist attack, the biggest natural disasters, and the biggest financial crisis in a century.
And you blundered on every one of them.
So, while Carl and others who have worked for the president, Karen Hughes, Dan Bartlett, Ari Fleischer, and others are all participating in responding to requests. A lot of them are requests from the media to
rewrite
to
history.
This presidency and
well,
to talk
Peter,
about it as we...
Yeah,
yeah, go ahead.
Because in the whitewash of the Bush legacy, it whitewashes their own participation in torture and violating Geneva Convention and the inescapable failure, the utter failure, the travesty of Katrina. And I talked about this a couple days ago where you have NBC crews turn their cameras on each other, and even the anchor said, we don't do this normally. Our crews are not part of the story. When they were begging for anybody from the federal government to come in to the Superdome, and that what did the feds say? What did Michael Brown and Chertoff and Bush? Well, we couldn't get there. Well, how do they think the crews got there, the news crews? Did they beam them in through a teletransporter?
They're better swimmers.
It's an idiotic, just not even idiotic, just a massive near-criminal failure of any kind of leadership. And
but wait, there's more BS from Dana Perino and a follow-up question from Helen Thomas.
In our last 46 days. Your first question was about Iraq. I think that you might be talking about the Charlie Gibson interview. I think it's important that people go back and look at that interview in context. I think some people have pulled out one half of a soundbite and made a judgment on what the president was saying. What the president talked about was that one of the disappointments of the administration is that the intelligence community had it wrong when it came to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And it wasn't just the President of the United States who thought that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein's own generals thought that he had weapons of mass destruction, and so did other leaders from all around the world. And so that's what he was talking about, was the specific on the intelligence failure. What we did from there is the president revamped the intelligence community. And we have a director of national intelligence now, and we have other measures in place to make sure that that doesn't happen again.
What about the chief of British intelligence saying you were going to fix the facts around the policy?
I think that that's been debunked. And
never been debunked.
Well, it's been debunked by me. And
good for you, said Helen Thomas.
You can't debunk a story simply by claiming I debunked this story.
Right.
Especially when the memorandums, we've seen the memorandums of the copies of the documents themselves.
And Scott, when she made a reference to Iraqi generals believing that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction, that's debunked because there was a defector. A high-level defector, I can't summon his name right now, but he coughed up information in September of 2002 that was quite credible, that Saddam didn't have WMD. There was no nuclear program. They had not reconstituted the chemical weapons program, and the stockpiles had, in fact, been destroyed. All that information was delivered to the Bush administration well before the orchestrated talk of a mushroom cloud and Saddam had to be stopped or there would be grave and gathering danger for the United States. It was all bogus.
And, Peter, you know what she's referencing, right? Intercepted cell phone conversations between generals who were talking about weapons of mass destruction, which also a defector said was an effort because they knew that it wasn't just the United States that was listening in. If it was really a classified information, they would have never said it over a cell phone.
Right. It was a bluff.
It was a total bluff. They wanted people to think they had weapons of mass destruction.
And the people in Washington wanted to hear that and didn't ask the same critical question that you just posed here, that these guys wouldn't say that over a cell phone unless they wanted it to be intercepted.
And there were too many other pieces of evidence to show that they didn't have them. So, let's take this cell phone out of context and go from there.
We'll take a break and return. Scott Dick with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can join us too, 888-5 Peter B. This program is produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Nick Tanum on duty today, taking your calls. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Good afternoon. This is Fia with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now, we have a traffic hazard in Santa Cruz on the North Bend 1, just south of Route 129. There is a pipe in lane number 1. And in the Hollister-Gilroy area, we have a collision with no injuries on County Road G7 at Route 25. CHP is on the scene there. In weather, your forecast for tonight is mostly clear with lows in the lower 40s. Friday will be mostly sunny with highs in the lower 60s. Here are some temperatures. Monterey is 52 degrees and clear. Salinas is 57 and hazy. And Santa Cruz is clear at 57. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a fantastic afternoon. And the Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, retired General Barry McCaffrey has frequently appeared on NBC as a military analyst, but oftentimes neither NBC nor McCaffrey will disclose that McCaffrey is a member of the board of directors at DynCorp International, a major defense contractor that was recently awarded a $317 million contract with the State Department. As the New York Times' David Barstow pointed out, McCaffrey is one of the numerous military analysts to have ties to defense contractors vested in the very war policies they are asked to assess. But the most ridiculous comment of the day goes to radio host Jim Quinn, justifying the killing of peaceful Muslims in the war on terror.
We either wipe this scourge from the face of the earth.
Well, you just can't say that because there's a lot of peaceful Muslims out there.
Well, there was a lot of Germans that weren't Nazis either, but we still bombed Dresden. We either wipe this scourge from the face of the earth or we will be doomed to live under it.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're on time and under budget. That's because we don't have a budget. Hey, thank you, Elvis. 7 minutes in front of the hour, we continue with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans matters here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Scott, you've been taking a look at some interesting memos from back in the Reagan administration era. And this was the time of the bloody protracted war between Iran and Iraq. It lasted for 8 years, from roughly 1980 to 1988. And the United States secretly sided with Saddam, while winking and nodding at the Iranians, who the Reagan team had courted for the October surprise, the release of the American hostages held at that embassy, and we shipped spare parts for airplanes and some missiles, Tomahawks maybe, to Iran in the early to mid-1980s, covertly, and then we covertly worked to assist Iraq in that struggle a little bit later in that decade.
Well, we played both sides. We sent, according to this declassified secret memorandum I'm looking at, I printed it off. It said, unfortunately, though the equipment transferred to Iran from U.S. stocks was limited in type and amount, it is difficult to refute the Iraqis' underlying accusation that the U.S. has armed Iran to kill Iraqis and that the action may well have spurred others to sell to Tehran. So this was the, you know, big evil, Iran, yet we were arming them.
Mm-hmm.
So we were selling to both sides.
Well, it's very interesting. I have on a computer at home an electronic copy of a cable, a diplomatic cable, a State Department communique, that was authorized by Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush. And it was dated in late 1987. And it authorized the conversion of $3 billion in Iraqi agricultural credits to cash. And that money was used by Saddam to buy weapons to continue his war with the Iranians. And this occurred after Donald Rumsfeld's famous visit to Baghdad, which was around 1984, where he sent the message that you're going to hear some fol-de-rol from President Reagan about chemical, biological weapons, and we just want you to know that you can ignore that. And so we were tipping our hand to Saddam. It was okay with us if he wanted to use weapons of mass destruction on the Iranians.
Well, just this is, I'm looking at another memorandum dated December 29th, 1988. And in the paragraph, it's an action memorandum. Another last page is approved, disapproved signature page. I mean, that's how the bureaucracy works. And you give different recommendations with a slot for approve or disapprove, then they initial what they want to do. And in this one, by the way, this one was the initial to approve, and everyone except one, it said more. No, it wasn't. I don't have that page. So, essential factors. The Ex-Im Bank is the export-import bank mm-hmm. of the United States.
Right.
Currently offers short-term insurance facility for Iraq limited to $200 million exposure. The Ex-Im staff believes that to operate more effectively in Iraq, the bank should move to medium-term financing, formally linking new cover to short-term performance One approach under consideration would extend $100 million in medium-term cover once short-term repayments reach $100 million. Further, $50 million goes on with maximum credits to $200 million. This way, a gradual increase in exposure would maintain EXIM's leverage over Iraqi payments and encourage Iraq to import U.S. goods under short-term credits. Now, what's the legal consideration? It goes into how the EXIM is required by statute to make its decisions solely on financial and commercial factors. The only exception provided where the president determines that such action would clearly and importantly advance U.S. policy, blah, blah, blah. Now, Iraq down here, Iraq is potentially a major market and could offer several billion dollars worth of new U.S. exports over the next few years as reconstruction of the war damage gets underway. U.S. companies need access to longer-term credit guarantee to compete effectively for new business opportunities being opened. And it goes on to talk about the Westinghouse, a billion-dollar power plant, the big oil company and their work, and what this is all after, because there's somebody that wrote a paragraph about the gassing of the Kurds.
Mm-hmm.
So this was all after they knew about the gassing of the Kurds. They're still trying to find a way, the Republicans and the conservatives and the Reagan administration, finding a way to deal with Saddam Hussein, even though he had used poison gas on his own people, which we saw as a justification for invading Iraq, a country that did us no harm.
Yeah. It is fascinating. Some of the same players involved in both decades and just kind of oblivious to the history there, their own roles, and what it means to us today. Well, Scott, thank you for a great hour. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Appreciate it, Peter. Take care.
Scott Dick here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll take a break and return. Next hour, it's the Free Speech Zone. You can comment on any issue, offer any viewpoint, call me from anywhere within the sound of my voice. And if you call from New England, I've got a free DVD for you. It's our first week on AM 1510 in Boston, the Peter B. Collins Show.
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does yours?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. A sense of urgency on Capitol Hill today as the Detroit automakers launched their last best effort to get $34 billion in government loans. CBS News correspondent Cheryl Atkinson reports.
The head of the auto workers union, who agreed to concessions since last time, warned of increasingly dire straits.
I believe that we could lose General Motors by the end of this month.
With Congress officially on break, the head of the committee that held today's hearing said leaders will stay in Washington for the next 2 days, trying to figure out what they can do.
Nothing concentrates the mind like a death sentence, and we're looking at a death sentence here.
But perhaps the harshest dose of reality came from economist Mark Zandi.
The $34 billion in loans requested by the Big Three will not be sufficient for them to avoid bankruptcy at some point in the next 2 years.
The chief executives of GM, Ford, and Chrysler agreed to a government board that would supervise the companies and could order changes to their recovery strategies. Another one of those big swing days on Wall Street. The Dow rose only to dive late in the session. It finished 216 points lower at 8376. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus followed the action.
It was the energy companies that dragged the market south late in the day. And this is after an analyst at Merrill Lynch predicted we could see crude oil at $25 a barrel in the coming months.
More on oil from CBS News correspondent Dan Revive.
Now it's down by more than $100 a barrel since mid-July. The price of oil closed down $3 for the day at $43.67 a barrel. Main reasons cited by commodity traders: expectations of more economic slowdown, thus less demand for energy. The average price of gasoline down by more than a penny a day lately, AAA puts the national average now at $1.79 a gallon. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Washington.
Mortgage rates are down to 5.5%, but might go even lower. The Treasury Department confirms it's looking at a plan to drive rates down to 4.5% to stimulate home buying. Facebook, the very popular social networking website, has detected a virus. CBS News correspondent Cammy McCormick reports.
The virus is called CubeFace, and it apparently uses Facebook's messaging system to infect computers, then gathers information that might include credit card numbers. A company spokesman says only a very small percent of users have been affected by it, but an estimated 120 million people use Facebook, so it's a very attractive target. And one security expert says threats like this are on the rise.
As night fell in Washington, President Bush led the countdown for the lighting of the White House Christmas tree.
3, 2, 1.
It's another thing Mr. Bush is doing for the last time before he leaves office. The White House announced today that the president and his wife have bought a home in the affluent Preston Hollow section of Dallas. This is CBS News.
If you have irritable bowel syndrome, Digestive Advantage could be your best friend. It's a safe and natural, friendly probiotic made especially for you. Look for Digestive Advantage, Irritable Bowel Syndrome, and other Digestive Advantage products in the Digestive Aid section of retailers everywhere. Just remember the name, Digestive Advantage, a friend indeed. Mm-hmm. Digestive Advantage, Irritable Bowel Syndrome, is a medical food for the dietary management of IBS to be used under the supervision of your physician.
Time to go shop, shop till you drop. Traffic's a mess, has me distressed. No need to pout, Nuvi will reroute. Sale ends at 2, Nuvi gets me through. Miss traffic jam, Nuvi has a plan. No standing still, back road's a thrill. Look for the T on the Nuvi navigation tool. Even saves you fuel. Give a Garmin. Give a Garmin. Nuvi with a T puts your mind at ease. Garmin.com, Garmin.com. Traffic data not available in all areas.
CBS News correspondent Harley Carnes has details of a very unusual athletic event in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Sounds like a proud mama talking about her multi-sport daughter.
She's doing the tightrope, which is her best event. She's doing the wall climb and the hurdles.
Molly Hefner is talking about Marge, her trained rat, competing at Nebraska Wesleyan University in the Extreme Rat Challenge.
We just get bragging rights. The rats get the glory of sitting on a bronze, silver, gold pillow.
And maybe some good cheese. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Well, we're moving on now.
If you watch The Jeffersons, you'll remember Paul Benedict. For 10 years, he played the Jeffersons' English neighbor, Mr. Bentley. Benedict also had movie roles. He played the oddball director in The Goodbye Girl. We got word today that Paul Benedict was found dead Monday on Martha's Vineyard. He was 70 years old. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
How to perform holiday magic. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot. Get exclusive holiday decorations like stunning Christmas trees, ornaments, lights, and more. Step 2. Create a holiday wonderland inside and out. Step 3. Notice how it all fits nicely within your budget, which is every bit as magical as flying reindeer.
Right now, get up to 50% off select holiday decorations at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Free Speed Zone. Your calls and comments welcome this entire hour. I've got lines available. And I welcome your calls with comments. 888-5-PETER-B. That's my toll-free number. If you're a new listener in Boston, I'm going to say that for you slowly. It's 1-888-573-8372. And our generous reward program continues for New England listeners. If you call in and get on the air, we'll reward you today with a DVD of the documentary Burning the Future about coal in America. And we led the show today with the news that Bank of America has decided it will no longer lend money to mining operations that use the despicable mountaintop removal method. Yeah, that's where they blow the lid off the mountain, extract the coal, and then just leave the rubble behind. And if you're a new listener, I'll just recap the rules here. They're quite limited. We ask callers to be coherent. You can talk about any subject. You can call with any viewpoint. And if yours differs from mine, we want to hear it. And you can call from anywhere, including Costa Rica. Larry's back listening. He dropped me an email today. Good to hear from you, Larry. So we've talked about a lot today. You know that I'm opposed to a bailout for Detroit. I'm sickened by the bailout of Wall Street. But I do support a bailout for the states. California in particular needs help to avoid deeper cuts in critical services for the least fortunate among us. And also to try to prevent further cuts to the state public education system, the JUUL, the University of California, the California state system, and our community colleges are all putting freezes on enrollment because of the budget shortfall here. And together with the bailout, somebody needs to get Grover Norquist. And I don't believe in violence. But we've got to get him on a television program or a radio program and expose what he's doing. Because California is not the only place where Grover Norquist has organized legislators of the Republican ilk, gotten them all to sign no new taxes pledges. Now, I can understand the principle of conservatives that, you know, they like low taxes. But these are extraordinary circumstances. And to continue to use minority rule to prevent reasonable revenue increases, yes, tax increases, to be passed by legislatures is immoral. It's just downright wrong. And to constrict government at a time like this almost ensures that this recession could be deeper than anything we've ever experienced, and I'm not afraid to use the D word. I think we are at the risk of depression. Now, it took a year for the government to admit that we've been in recession. You knew it. I knew it. And I do see the signs of depression looming. And while I don't think the sky is falling in Detroit, and I don't think the world will end if General Motors goes into bankruptcy, I do think that if we fail to provide funds for the states right now, that it will set our country back in a significant, measurable way for a long period of time. By failing to make the investments in education, we are reducing our competitiveness in the world. And by failing to ensure that Medi-Cal, social service programs, public transit, and other basic services are preserved during this down part of the economic cycle, I think is very important. So that's the bailout I can support. I'd like to hear your thoughts about Detroit. The automakers learned a lesson. They drove their hybrids instead of flying their jets. Isn't that nice? But as I've pointed out, I continue to be infuriated. They keep running this Hummer Red Tag commercial. Now, look at these sales figures. General Motors, year-to-year sales dropped 41%. In November, Ford was down 31%, Chrysler 47%, Toyota 34%, Honda 32%, Nissan 42%. So you average that out, and somewhere in the 30s is where the market declined. But General Motors and Chrysler were the winners in this negative race. And I believe that both of them offer some decent vehicles. But instead, they're trying to sell us their gas-guzzling leftovers. And that's why I think that a bailout will only be a Band-Aid. And my view is that we need to put a cushion under the workers who are going to be hit the hardest and hurt the most, even if they give them a bailout. Now, here's one of the ironies, all right? There aren't enough votes, it appears, for a bailout at this point. But they're going to press the case on Friday and try to persuade the Congress to cough up some money for General Motors right now, some money for Chrysler right now. Now, one of the things that they will do with that money is lay off workers and shut down plants. Do we want to facilitate that? Do we want to use our money to enable Rick Wagoner to hold on to his job even at a dollar a year while he lays off more auto workers? And here's one of the interesting figures, all right? Total GM sales off 41% in November. The Saturn unit, sales were down only 21%. That's 10 or 12 points below the average for all car makers. You would say, aha, that's the jewel in the General Motors jewel box. But the talk is that with the bailout money, General Motors will either sell or dismantle the Saturn line. Now, it doesn't have the completely separate manufacturing plants that it used to when it started up 20 years ago. But this is the kind of ridiculous, it's not just irony, it's downright contradictory. That Detroit comes in, says, give us money so we can decimate the workforce and continue to make cars that people don't want to buy. I don't get it, and I can't support it. Two other quick updates, and then we'll go to your calls here. The lines are lighting up, and I'm pleased by that. More missing ballots in Minnesota. And the recount in the Franken-Coleman contested Senate race was supposed to wrap up on Friday, but it must be extended. There are missing ballots, according to the Franken campaign. More than 100 ballots in Minneapolis have disappeared. So I don't know all the details there, but that is the latest, that we don't have a result, and it's not expected soon. One other story, and for the details, go to Jason Leopold's site, pubrecord.org. That's the public record. The Pentagon expects to have 20,000 soldiers inside the United States by 2011 to work with state and local officials in the event of a terrorist attack or another disaster. A controversial move that civil liberties groups say violates a federal law, posse comitatus, restricting the military's role in domestic law enforcement. And that's what Gina wants to talk about today. I'm glad you called, Gina. You're on the air.
Hi. One thing before that. I thought a European company bought out Chrysler several months ago.
No, it was years ago.
Oh, okay.
It was
owned by a foreign company?
No. Here's the rub, Gina. Chrysler was purchased by the people who make Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah.
It's called Daimler. Okay,
yeah.
Daimler-Benz is the German holding company. Mm-hmm. They paid somewhere north of $25 or $30 billion for Chrysler, and it bled them. And so when they went to sell it, they couldn't find a buyer. And they gave it away and paid the new owners an additional $8.7 billion to take it off their hands. The reason is there are a lot of unfunded pension and health liabilities for retired Chrysler workers and some who currently still work there. And the Germans wanted to get out from under it. And so a murky group called Cerebrus Capital is now the owner of Chrysler.
Is that U.S.?
It is, I believe, an American company. And we think that the Carlyle Group...
That's what I was fixing to ask.
...has a piece of that. I haven't seen proof of that, but I've read people allege that. So if that may or may not be the case, but that's what I understand.
Oh, that's a conflict of interest, isn't it? As far as the government, Bush... And they don't want, and they're fighting it? Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
That sounds like that's the opposite of what they want us to do. Well, anyway, posse comitatus.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't Obama say he was going to allocate more money for another force in the United States that's non-military?
I don't recall that. He has supported the idea of adding more troops to our main military. I believe the Army is what he is proposing to beef up.
Well, I heard that there was going to be a separate force that was non-military. Okay. Now, if we had non-military, we wouldn't be violating the posse comitatus. Also, it might be easier to recruit kids into something that was inside the United States, and if we had to later on nationalize it and make it part of the military. I mean, we've got all kinds of possibilities there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think it's a recruiting issue, Gina. To me, the issue here is that we have crossed a number of lines.
I don't trust anybody anymore. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm not an independent either.
You a mess, Gina. That's what you are.
Is that what I am?
I guess you are.
But now we've got to keep our eyes open. Now, the first thing that we should be bailing out is production. Without production, we don't need educated kids. We don't need anything else, okay? Because a consumer nation is going down the tubes anyway, because we're totally dependent on the whole world for everything. And as merciful as we've been, I'm not too sure that we would have very many people be merciful to us. So we cannot expect the goodwill of the world to keep us going. We're going to have to get off our butts and do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And start making things.
Well, Gina, the thing that I believe will preserve manufacturing in this country to the greatest degree is universal single-payer health care.
I do, too. I think that would be the first start.
And as the Professor Auerbach, who was on with us earlier today, pointed out, if we fully fund the pension guarantee fund of the federal government, then we could allow some of these companies to transfer their pension liabilities to the federal government. I'm not a big fan of that because I believe these are contracts that should be honored. But
a contract is a contract.
Right. But the worst case is that if these companies go under, then these benefits would never be paid. So if we have to make the Hobson's choice, I'd rather bail them out of the pension issue and make sure that those retirees do get their pensions than have all this crumble and just see, again, the workers be the victims of the misdeeds of Detroit management. We'll take a break and return to more of your phone calls. It's the Free Speech Zone. Exercise your First Amendment rights. Lines are open for you, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
The holidays can be a time of hope and connection, and can bring opportunities to spend more time with friends and family. For some, this can be the most difficult time of the year. This year, think of the true spirit of the holidays and consider giving the gift of a renewed connection with someone you care about. I'm Mark LeCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Santa Claus and Dr. Chaim Barton. I can work with you and your loved ones to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection this holiday season. I still have a few spaces left and would love to help. Please call one of our elves for an appointment. 831-818-4033. That's area code 831-818-4033.
Space, the final frontier. Knowing the truth, the ultimate frontier. Quantum Leap and KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
This is PWT News. We are here at the North Pole where scandal has erupted. Accusations, rumors, and all-out attacks are flying fast and furious around Santa's Toy Shop this holiday season. Can St. Nicholas himself really be guilty of sexual harassment against one of the reindeer? Look, there's Dasher. Dasher, can you comment on the scandal?
You want to comment? I got a comment. I don't know what happened. I don't know, and I don't want to know.
Can Christmas be saved in the face of these accusations?
I'm flying. I'll be leading the eight this year, next year, every year.
And does Mrs. Claus have a drinking problem?
Lady, what the are you talking about?
Paperwing Theater Company presents the dark Christmas comedy, The Eight Reindeer Monologues, December 5th through 22nd at 320 Hoffman Avenue in Monterey. Get tickets at the door or by calling 675-0521. The Eight Reindeer Monologues is a tart alternative to candy cane Christmas cheer. Call 675-0521 to reserve tickets now. Come and see what all the eight reindeer have to say about this scandal. Call 675-0521 now.
Good evening, everyone. This is Thea Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Right now in Salinas on the northbound 101 at Baranda Road, we have a traffic collision with no injuries. Taking a look at Santa Cruz on Route 9 at Graham Hill Road, we have a collision with no injuries. Moving on over to the Hollister-Gilroy area, we have a couple of incidents happening. On County Road G7 at Route 25, there is a traffic collision with no injuries, and CHP is on the scene there. And there is a traffic hazard on Little Panache Road, just north of Vasquez Creek Road. That's traffic on AM 540. Have a great commute and stay safe out there, everybody. We will return with the Peter B. Collins Show.
From San Francisco to Boston, coast to coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Shoots up through the stony ground, there's no room, no space to rent in this town, you're out of luck. And the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck.
That's right, Bono. It's a beautiful day in Boston. Progressive Talk is back on the air. Jeff Santos, live and local every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., and your humble host, Peter B. Here every weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm glad you've found us now. Go out and tell your friends. You're our marketing budget, so let people know. There's Progressive Talk on the radio in Boston at 1510 a.m. And Alan's in Boston calling tonight. Hi, Alan.
Hi there.
Great to talk with you. Thanks for checking in.
Yeah, great to talk with you, too. I actually met you at the Nonstop Symposium, Radio Symposium in Madison, Wisconsin.
Well, I remember that well, Alan. I enjoyed talking with you there. And you're one of the conspirators who's been helping to lead the charge to bring Progressive Talk to Boston.
That's right.
Well, it's really satisfying for me, and when you call in and others do, well, it helps me know that the signal's getting through, and all we got to do is build an audience one listener at a time. That's how we do it.
That's right, and your show is just great. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, I appreciate that. Now, Alan, I have a trick question for you.
Okay.
When you drive through the Big Dig under the tunnel there, do AM radio signals hang in? Is there an antenna system there, or do we get blocked out when people go through the Big Dig?
I haven't tried, but I'll ask around.
Okay.
But I did have one comment to make about the economic situation, and that's you're familiar with Naomi Wolf's shock doctrine.
I sure am. I think it is the must-read book of the last couple of years.
Right, and I must read it myself. But what her thesis is that when that economic stresses are used as a time to introduce bad changes. And I think what also seems to be the case is that it seems to be used as an excuse for not bringing in good changes.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like people had already kind of conferred in private and decided that this was what they were going to do when Obama came along.
Well, we've seen many situations here where conditions have created an opportunity. Let's just talk about the Patriot Act, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So after 9/11, the Patriot Act suddenly appeared. Now, this is a huge document. I think it's 1,400 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cobbled together from wish lists of right-wing legislators who couldn't get it passed otherwise. And so these are things that had been kind of prefab, and they're sitting around on a computer on Capitol Hill, and we're attacked, and they say, aha, here's the way we can use national security letters to go to libraries and demand a look at people's records, and then prevent the librarians from telling the cardholder, hey, there was somebody here from the FBI checking out what books you've been checking out. That's just one example. And we have seen this time and time again. And now the so-called economic crisis that we have, and sure, there are real problems. I'm not in denial about that. But Wall Street comes running. And, you know, when has the first overpaid Wall Street executive volunteered to put his own money into a bailout fund to help any one of these companies, Bear Stearns, Citigroup, you pick your poison? What, you know, what executive of AIG said, you know, my company's been really good to me. I've made $150 million in the last 5 years, so I'm going to step up to the plate here, and here's $10 million. I know it's a drop in the bucket, but it's good faith money to show that I'm worth bailing out. But we haven't seen a dime of private money, not in Detroit, not with the bank system. And $8.5 trillion of our money is pledged or already spent for this bailout. It's shocking, it's stunning, and it makes my eyeballs spin vertically. I got to run, Alan. Thanks for calling. You get a free DVD. Hold on, and we'll mail it to you, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Good to talk to you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma-and-pop prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need, from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run.
I know how hard it is to get out and exercise this time of year. It's cold in the mornings and dark out by the time you get home from work. Hi, this is Adam over at Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz. Let us help you stay fit this winter. Check out our reflective gear and cool weather apparel. More importantly, join us for our weekly nighttime runs at the Lighthouse on Westcliff every Wednesday at 5:46 p.m. We'll have plenty of lights and reflective gear for you to borrow to stay safe. There's safety in numbers, so get out and run, walk, or jog with us. All abilities welcome. We'll see you at the Lighthouse.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz, or visit them online at centralcoastrunning.com.
Wide open Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Nyken Robinson. Four on three up the left side, Jamal Boykin in the open floor. Goes in and Vidy and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
Cal Bears are on a slow wagon train headed for Missouri. They'll be there Sunday for a morning game here at 10:30 a.m. Sunday, December 7th.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We can argue, but please, no fighting.
He's up in here tonight. No fighting.
We got the refugees.
No fighting. No fighting.
Do me a favor, turn this up, will
you? Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad. So be one and keep on beating the sounds of my body. I'm on tonight, you know my head is so high, and I'm starting to feel it's right. All the attraction, the tension. Baby, this is perfection.
Hey, guys, I can see your body moving.
Oh, yeah.
And it's driving me crazy. And I didn't have the slightest idea until I saw you dancing. And when you walk up on the dance floor, nobody can ignore the way you move your body, girl. And everything's so unexpected, the way you write and lift it. So you can keep on shaking it.
Never really knew that she can dance like this. She make a man want to speak Spanish. Como se llama?
My goal is to make a woman go mad. Two victims so far. I am your humble host, Peter B. Collins, the new kid on the block in Boston radio. Delighted to hear from Alan a few minutes ago. And if you're listening in Boston, screw up your courage, pick up your phone, even that fancy iPhone or cell phone, and join us here in the free speech zone. It's 888-5-PETER-B, 1-888, yeah, 888-5. And then 738372, and cleverly, that spells 5-PETER-B. You got all that, or did I just confuse you? 888-573-8372, and my email is peter@peterbcollins.com, humblehost@peterbcollins.com, or should you disagree with me, fullofit@peterbcollins.com. A couple items I want to add to the mix, and then more of your phone calls here. There are two efforts underway by the right wing to use technical legal issues to try to prevent Barack Obama from becoming President of the United States and to try to prevent Hillary Clinton from becoming Secretary of State. They're very different issues. You know about the Obama issue, it's the birth certificate thing. And I was shocked today to get an email from Mark Crispin Miller at New York University, newsfromunderground.com or markcrispinmiller.com if you'd like to sign up to receive those alerts, that the United States Supreme Court has accepted for review a filing from Alan Keyes. You remember him? Used to have a talk show on MSNBC. He's an African-American nut. He was parachuted into Illinois to oppose Barack Obama when he ran for the U.S. Senate there, and the white Republican candidate bailed out due to a sex scandal. So Alan Keyes, working on the efforts of a Philadelphia attorney named Philip Berg, has filed with the Supreme Court an emergency brief challenging Barack Obama's qualifications to become president. And guess which Supreme Court justice has decided to accept this for review? I'll give you a second. Let's just pull Billy up here. He's our next caller. Billy, which justice?
It has to be Scalia or Thomas.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
I'll be back to you. Clarence Thomas has accepted this case for review. Don't know what will happen because previously I think David Souter said, nah. But they are pressing this a little further. The other issue is complicated. They are saying that because Hillary Clinton voted for a bill that increased the salaries of cabinet officers, including Secretary of State, that she is ineligible to become Secretary of State. In fact, any senator who voted for it under this argument would be disqualified. Now, I don't know how serious an issue this is. And if you're a lawyer, an attorney, a law professor, or you just know more than I do, I want you to call in and explain it to me. Because I've never seen this come up before. It seems to be a silly technicality. Hillary Clinton voted for that without any knowledge that she would be Secretary of State. She thought she was going to be president. So certainly her intention as a senator was not to line her own pockets should she become a cabinet officer. If you know about that, give me a call, 888-5-PETER-B. And now, Billy, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Well, as far as Hillary's concerned, she doesn't need to take the salary. Bill can make the same amount of her salary in a single speech. So that's how you can get around that.
That's interesting, yeah.
And as far as Boston's concerned, as a public service, I'd like to give them the weather report, and that is not as good as it is in Santa Cruz. I have to tease Boston.
You got to rub it in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I thought, you know, this shock doctrine that was mentioned before.
Naomi Klein, and let me just reference that our friend Larry in Costa Rica sent me a lengthy email today. He's been reading Naomi Klein's shock doctrine and getting shocked by it.
Well, you know, it could go both ways, and I want to go the other way with it. Normally, the shock doctrine suggests that we get screwed by our government at moments of crisis because we're, you know, shocked and mm-hmm. they can get away with murder.
Right.
Well, I would suggest to you that now is the time for, well, it's my new book title as well, Capitalism 2.0.
Okay.
If ever there was a time to rethink capitalism, you know, you and I have been having this conversation way before this crisis, haven't we?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, now is the time I think everybody's willing to consider it. Anyone would agree that capitalism has literally failed this country at this point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of things that need to be changed about capitalism, and I thought we should look at the one that you were talking about before, and that is the auto industry. I have the answer.
All right. Tell me.
It's pretty simple.
Let's put Billy in charge of General Motors.
Well, I'll tell you who I do want to put in charge of General Motors. First of all, the reality is that they're asking for more money than the company is worth by a factor of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we do is the government basically, you know, just takes it away from them, buys it from them for whatever it's worth today,
mm-hmm.
Lets them go into bankruptcy. And then what we do, and you're going to love this, Peter.
We take it public.
We sell it. No, no. We sell it to the UAW.
Okay.
We, you know, let them pass off. We, you know, we sort of, you know, use the same money we would have used to bail them out to, mm-hmm. you know, bail them out and let them slowly but surely buy it from us.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, we've got, first of all, the best experiment for capitalism 2.0 than we've had for a while, and that is an employee-owned major business.
An ESOP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And why not? You know, instead of management and you know, workers fighting over this thing, and as we always know, the people who get the showers after work don't get bailed out. It's people who take showers to go to work, like finance people, that get the bailout.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a good analogy?
Yeah.
You know?
We could say, too, the people who spend too much money on cologne.
That's another way to put it. People wear wear a tie to work.
Yeah.
But anyway, how about that? Putting it on, you know, giving it to the UAW, saying, you know what? It's yours. Now, the first thing that will happen, of course, is the UAW will start to make the kind of concessions to itself it would never have made to management.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them, because management's been screwing them for the last 50 years. Why would they want to make concessions to those guys?
But I was really, as a guy who's been a labor negotiator, I mean, I've sat across the table from management at contract time. It's offensive to me that the UAW negotiated with itself and coughed up these major concessions. They said that the automakers don't have to pay into the pension and health funds as promised, and that's a very risky maneuver because
and that's the one
even after this bailout, one of these companies goes down, they have given away a major portion of that right. The other part is that they've got this scheme where when you get laid off, up to 3,600 workers qualify for a 95% paycheck. That I'm not so offended by. But they've also just sent signals of, hey, negotiate with us. Ask us for concessions. And I think that that's the wrong move at this time. I know they're trying to help, and I understand their intentions. But I think
they're trying to keep their jobs. That's their intention.
But Gettelfinger made a big blunder there. That's my opinion. We're trying to get him on the show, by the way, so I can tell him that ear to ear.
So now, if I were to ask you for an essay for my book on Capitalism 2.0, what do you feel passionate about needs to be changed about capitalism? What would you write about?
Well, you know, Billy, I once wrote a book that nobody bought about the beauties of the corporate structure because I was in a business where my partner died, and it almost took me into bankruptcy. And that's how I learned about the limited liability that the corporate form gives you. And if we allowed the corporate structure to work the way it's supposed to, where the board of directors actually represents the interest of the shareholders and not the CEO who gets overpaid and bonused up the butt.
That's right.
Okay?
That's right.
If the system were permitted to work, including bankruptcy. That's part of the beauty of this, is that when a company fails, it implodes, and others come along and buy up the valuable parts, and the rest is discarded. And that's why I don't buy the sky is falling rhetoric from Detroit. It's not the end of the world. It is the end of an era.
It's their world.
It's the end of an era.
It's only the end of their world, and it's a world that they destroyed themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Billy, you make a great point. Let's see if other people want to chime in about letting the UAW buy General Motors.
And as far as Capitalism 2.0 is concerned, I'm accepting essays from all of our friends in radio. Anybody that's got a good idea about how this great thing called capitalism can finally work for us instead of against us.
All right.
I want to hear from them.
Very good. Thank you, Billy. That's Billy in Capitola, California on our beautiful Central Coast. Every week we like to check in at the Post Times Sun Dispatch. Reporter R.J. Schulman gets the news he can't find anywhere else, and there's a reason for it. R.J., welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Hi, Peter B. How are you doing this week?
I'm all right. A big shout-out to Boston. This is your day, bud.
That's great. Congratulations on getting into such a wonderful city.
Well, I'm very pleased, and thank you. Now, just for background for our new listeners in Boston, R.J. Schulman has worked at 13 major daily newspapers, including the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Sun-Times in Chicago, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Now, did you ever work and get fired in Boston, R.J.?
Yeah, actually, but I got fired before I even started my first day.
Oh.
So I didn't really get too much done in Boston. But
now, was that at the Globe, and was that before the barnacle problem surfaced?
Yeah, it was at the Globe, and it was before that problem surfaced. That's exactly right.
I see. Okay. So you were there for a Boston minute. Just time for a little chowder and out of town.
That's right.
Okay. All right. So you don't have any warrants left in Boston or
any? No, it was a wicked shot time there.
I see. Wicked shot. Well, at the top of your news items here at the Post-Times Sun-Dispatch, and let me give out your web address for our new listeners. It's pretty simple. PTSD, that stands for Post-Times Sun-Dispatch, PTSD, the digit 1, .blogspot.com. I'll repeat that, because I've been trained to do that as a pronouncer. PTSD1.blogspot.com. www.blogspot.com. And your lead story is about the Saxby Chambliss victory in Georgia. What went on there, RJ?
Well, you know, he did win in Georgia, and I thought the big news story, which everyone else missed, was that Fox was calling this proof that America has completely repudiated Barack Obama's longstanding failed policies. That's what they said. In other words, they're saying that everyone's sick of Obama already.
Well,
they're ready to go back to conservative values,
and
opposed to San Francisco values.
Right, and your headline reads that Fox is trying to make him out to be the first lame duck president-elect.
That's right. That's what they're claiming.
Now, that is novel. So this is interesting because they've tried to make this an Obama recession. He's not in office yet. I guess they got tired of blaming Bill Clinton for all of Bush's failures.
Yeah, that didn't work. After a while, people were tired of that. So now they're going to blame everything on Obama.
Mm-hmm.
We expect that pretty soon they're going to blame Original Sin on him, too. That's coming soon.
Now, reporter R.J. Shulman, we've been hearing a lot of George W. Bush's ruminating in these exit interviews, making excuses for his failures. But nobody's really asked him what he's going to do next. And somehow you're on top of this story. Tell us about it.
Yeah, he says that his new home is going to be the sea. He has decided to join up with the Somali pirates and become a pirate.
I see. Now, is this some kind of a Johnny Depp wannabe? What's driving this?
I think that one of the persons who picked this out the best, I think, was a professor at political science at Yale named Blair Shepard, and he said that what's going to happen is Bush is going to get to use shock and awe when he invades unarmed boats. He's going to continue to steal other people's oil, and he can say mission accomplished on the deck of a large ship. This is going to make him very happy.
You think he'll wear a patch or any kind of accessories like an old-style pirate?
I think what he might wear is, one of those earpieces so that Cheney can tell him exactly how to be a pirate.
I see. And what's the latest with that sad, sad situation at Walmart on Long Island where the greeter was trampled? This was a guy who was a big man, over 6 feet, 270 pounds, and he was trampled by this horde of consumers, these shoppers, who could not be held back from the bargains inside that Walmart.
You know, this is a very sad story, but I think what's even sadder is what Walmart is doing. They have basically said that their position is since he only worked 37.5 hours, he is not qualified to have a safe working place under the law. That's their interpretation.
Ooh, that's really ugly. Wow.
Yeah, they're also saying that since all their stuff is made in China, that anybody who works at Walmart is afforded the same rights as a Chinese worker, which, of course, is nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's a quote from the grandson of Sam Walton, Duke Walton. He said, this is a real tragedy. You do all you can to bring low prices to Americans, and the first thing you want to do is sue your pants off. These people shouldn't be complaining about working conditions because with this economy, they should be killing for these jobs. Wow, that's Marie Antoinette kind of talk.
Yeah, I think so. But that's the way it's going. So we'll have to see.
All right. Well, RJ, thank you for your exclusive report, and people can read more about it at the website of the Post-Times Sun-Dispatch. That's PTSD1.blogspot.com. Thank you, RJ. We'll take a break and return to the free speech zone. There's a line open for you right now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Everyone, this is Thea with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. There is a loose horse in the road on Echo Valley Road at South Bend 101. We have another animal in the road on the one at South Morse Drive. A dog is in the freeway. Please watch out for both of these animals. In Salinas on the northbound 101 at Paranda Road, we have a no-injury collision. CHP is on the way there. And weather right now, we've got a lot of haze out there. Temperatures along the Central Coast are in the mid-50s to lower 40s. Your extended forecast for the weekend will be gorgeous, mostly sunny, and highs will be in the mid-60s. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a fantastic evening, and the Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Let me welcome you to Planet Cruise.
It's an all-new Planet Cruise comedy show at the Columba Jazz Center in Santa Cruz this Friday, December 5th, 8 p.m. This Friday, we will have liberal comedy songwriter phenom Roy Zimmerman, along with the Jewish family comic Jeff Applebaum, science comedian Brian Mallow, the young rising star Grant Lyon, the great Morgani, the Planetoid Band, sketch comedy with sound effects master Sven Davis, Lisa Licious, the spontaneous applause sign lady, all at the next live Planet Cruise, Friday, December 5th at the Columba. That's at 320 Cedar Street in Santa Cruz. Tickets $18 in advance, save $5 at Streetlight Records, Gateways Books in Santa Cruz, or online at planetcruise.org. Come on down to the Planet Cruise Comedy Hour at the Columba. Laugh your glutes off.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 7 minutes in front of the hour. Just about time for us to wrap it up today. You can grab a podcast of this program and share it with a friend. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
I've been watching you for days now, baby. I just love your sexy ways now, baby. You know my love will never stop now, baby. Just put your love in my box now, baby. Wrap it up. I'll take it. Wrap it up. I'll take it. Well, no more will I shop around now, baby.
And the free speech zone continues. Next up, John in Carmel Valley, listening on KRXA. Hi, John.
Well, Peter, you know, a name I haven't heard mentioned in connection with the Detroit bailout is Lee Iacocca.
You know, I checked. He's still alive and retired, but he certainly hasn't made any media appearances to talk about the current troubles there in Motown.
I would get him if I were on any of those committees trying to make the decision, or at least interview people who could help them make it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he should still be called Mr. Detroit, because he was the one, when he was at Ford, he brought out the Mustang.
That's right.
And then he became head of Chrysler, and wasn't that during the time Chrysler took a government bailout?
That's right. And, you know, one of the things that he did that could be a model for the future of Detroit products is that he turned around and trimmed the fat at Chrysler. And do you remember the K car? That was a chassis that was mass-produced and was more economical than some of the other ways they were building cars. And then they would put, you know, different bodies on the K-car chassis. And it was a way of trimming costs while maintaining, you know, a variety of brands and products to appeal to different types of buyers.
Well, he did make one mistake that I detected in a... was in a National Geographic, the ad section of the early 80s. he was using Frank Sinatra to have a conversation with, and he was trying to resurrect the Chrysler Imperial, and I think it was the last model they made, and as far as I know, it was a huge failure. It was probably a reasonably advanced car, but it was not what the public, at least at that time, it looked very similar to the Lincoln Continental. I mean, it was obviously, it was a failure. And if I had him and I could ask him any question, I would try to slip that one in just to see how he would respond to a negative question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he is a clear thinker. He is a guy who came out of the auto industry but could remain critical. And I think that overall, he did turn Chrysler around. They paid back the paltry less than $2 billion that was advanced to them at the time. And it was a pretty good company until it hit the rocks with this sale to Daimler and then the handoff back. And so Chrysler is a troubled company. There's no doubt about that. And still, they are sitting on a decent pile of cash, I think somewhere around $11 billion. And that's one of the reasons General Motors toyed with trying to take it over a couple of months ago. Not that they, you know, wanted to own more factories and sell different brands of cars, but they wanted to grab the cash as they dismantled Chrysler. And this continues to be my concern, John, that whatever kind of bailout happens is going to facilitate further cutbacks in employment, further shutdowns in production plants around the country. That has a ripple effect into the parts industry and into the economies of the towns where those layoffs and shutdowns occur. And so if that's going to happen, why do we paper this over with a bailout and the pretense that, you know, we're protecting an industry and its workers? Let's really protect the workers. Let's give them a future. Let's guarantee them retraining into a green economy as Detroit tries to retool, hopefully under new management.
Yeah, I agree. Totally.
All right, John. Thanks for checking in today. Always good to hear from you. That's John in Carmel Valley. Well, thanks for tuning in to the Peter B. Collins Show today. I would appreciate any feedback, particularly if you're a new listener in New England and you haven't summoned the courage to call, or maybe you just haven't had the time and the opportunity, I understand. But you can email me, that's peter@peterbcollins.com, and let me know what you think. We'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same great radio stations for another show.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
I want you to know I heard your message loud and clear.
Ford CEO Alan Mulally and his fellow auto executives went before the Senate Banking Committee today with the restructuring plans demanded by Congress and their pleas for cash. CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein reports.
Rick Wagner of GM asked for the most money.
Our plan respectfully requests $12 billion in short-term loans and a $6 billion line of credit.
Ford and Chrysler want $16 billion more. Alabama Republican Richard Shelby said a bank would probably refuse.
A lot of people believe sincerely that the restructuring plans are not a serious set of plans.
But after the hearing, Chairman Christopher Dodd said there may be no choice.
The coin of phrase, nothing constitutes
concentrates the mind like a death sentence.
Witnesses said without federal help, GM might collapse by the end of the month. Howard Ehrenstein, CBS News, Washington.
The automakers appear before a House panel tomorrow. The White House is staying out of it for now, spokeswoman Dana Perino.
Since the Democratic leadership invited the automakers to come to Washington to testify in front of them today and tomorrow, that we should allow them to do that before passing any judgment on their plans. I think we should hear from them.
Tom Close's head is spinning. The head of the Oil Price Information Service can hardly believe what's happened in the oil market.
If you look at today's closing prices, we've actually closed more than $100 a barrel lower than the highest settlement price ever, which I think was on July 11th.
Less than 5 months ago, oil fell another $3 today, settling at $43.67 a barrel. If the global economy continues to worsen, some analysts say we could see $25 oil next year. Gasoline keeps coming down. Close of pegs the national average at $1.79 a gallon. People flocked to the stores on Black Friday, but it wasn't enough to pull retailers out of a hole. November was their worst month in nearly 40 years. The only exception was Walmart, with a sales increase of 3.4%. Online shopping is healthier. CBS News correspondent Carrie McCormick reports.
It may be a more cheerful holiday season for online retailers. Comscore says business was up on Cyber Monday 15% over last year. The day got its name because so many people returned to work after Thanksgiving and began their online shopping. This year,